Let's get together, talk about the movies that we saw this week. We'll have discussions, talk film news, we'll laugh a lot and act like geeks. Sometimes we'll have a guest or two, sometimes it's just the two of us. Let's crack some jokes and tell some folks to come along and hang with us!
Mike and Mike go to the movies. Mike and Mike go to the movies. Yeah!
You have chosen wise.
Hello and welcome to the podcast that takes place 500 years in the future, Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a man with those uncanny valley eyes.
Mike Tricio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing great. So are my baby blues. Everything's wonderful.
That's really good to hear. Joining us this time around, also making his triumphant return to the podcast, it's your boy, Vin Craig. Vin, how's it going, man?
Good. How's everybody doing? Doing an ASMR thing, right?
Nope. We thought we talked about this.
I think we previously
right before we started recording, we talked about it. Just wanted to capitalize on the laughs before they went away.
Fair enough. So Vin is here, which is great. You were supposed to be here for the Bird Box episode we did a few months ago.
Weeks
ago, I guess at this point. But you've been having some issues.
Yeah, I don't have, as the kids say, a laptop anymore.
Right. That is an issue for sure.
I took it to Best Buy and they were like, "Oh yeah, this is you can't. There's nothing we can do." just like put it down, Jim. Get your files while you can.
Exactly. Luckily though, we were able to hook you up. Our friend Kyle Cullen was able to supply his own kind of studio for you to use. Thank you again for that, Kyle.
You're welcome.
We're really committing to the ASMR bit. I dig it. Credit for all of our theme songs goes to Kyle Cullen, who is right here. And if you want to contact us, you can send us an email, mikeandmikegotothemovies@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes or Apple Podcasts if you can, since it helps people find the show and makes us feel good about ourselves when we get those good reviews. Now, if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we're going to start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where we all each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. This time around, we're kind of getting rid of the film news segment because, as of this recording, the Oscars just aired last night. And I think we've all got a lot to say about them, so I figured just take that whole segment to talk about the Oscars. And there wasn't really that much in the film news world over the last couple of weeks anyway that really warranted a ton of discussion. Only a couple of stories there. I know John Krasinski's coming back for A Quiet Place 2. That's kind of a big deal. But one of the big stories of the past couple of weeks, and I wanted Kyle to be in the room while we talked about this just kind of briefly, is that Chris Hemsworth has been cast as Hulk Hogan. In a biopic that'll be on Netflix.
Goddamn right he is.
Now, the reason I wanted Kyle to just be there present while I mentioned this is because years ago, this dates back to like 2009, I think the two of us were over at Hershey Park in Pennsylvania. And
set the scene.
What's that?
Set the scene.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not trying to be a dickhead.
It is the scene. No, you're right. And we were online for this ride for like 2 hours, right? And we were just sitting there brainstorming who could possibly play Thor in a Marvel movie for that 2 hour span, because we knew they were casting Thor, and we were like, well, who could it be? Because we were like excited about it, excited about the prospect of Thor. Now I will tell you that my choice for Thor was Colin Farrell.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jinx.
And I still think like 2009 era Colin Farrell might have been able to pull it off. Like today, Colin Farrell, I'm not really so sure, but the Colin Farrell of yesteryear, I could see it.
He was coming right off of In Bruges, right?
That was around the time of In Bruges. Yes, you're right. I don't know. Mostly, it was like, oh, he's Irish and he has long hair. He's got it. That's the.
That's all it takes.
That was
you
my
know.
Thing.
Your bar was so low.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? My bar was pretty low. Kyle's was even lower.
I disagree wholeheartedly. I still think to this day that in the Marvel's first Thor movie, that Hulk Hogan would have absolutely crushed it as the God of Thunder, Thor. And you will never convince me otherwise.
You realize. Okay. That's why I'm bringing this up. It's because your choice for Thor was Hulk Hogan. Even though at that time, Hulk Hogan was like 60 years old.
Isn't he still about 60, right? Okay. He doesn't age. He stopped,
is
right?
Is he still 60?
I think hair looks exactly the same.
Maybe I think when he hit 60, he stopped.
Maybe. That's got to be what it is. But your prospect for Thor was just because he had long blonde hair and muscles.
Yeah.
But, you know,
flawless thinking.
You neglected the thing that Hulk Hogan can't act and the fact that Hulk Hogan.
Did you see Mr. Nanny? Or Suburban Commando?
Clearly he hasn't.
Suburban Commando or something? Yeah, wasn't that the one?
Three Ninjas, Lloyd? High Noon at Mega Mountain? Come on. I got Hogan movies for days.
Rocky 3?
Yeah.
3? Yeah, Rocky 3. Come on.
Yeah,
ready
right.
to rumble?
Come on,
I think
bro.
We know what season 2 of The Complete Works is going to be now.
It's going to be Hulk Hogan. It sounds like that should be those guys' podcast.
Okay.
I'd do that.
I'll do it.
Kyle and Vin doing their own Complete Works about Hulk Hogan. I would listen to that. All the time. Like, I'm just saying.
That'd be amazing.
It's a good idea.
It's a completely ASMR podcast.
We're talking about Hulk ASMR Hogan Hulk Hogan complete.
He's a real American.
Fighting for the rights of every man. But anyway, yeah. So Chris Hemsworth is playing Hulk Hogan in a Netflix biopic. So it's like this weird thing where it has come around full circle where you wanted Hulk Hogan to play Thor. And now Thor is playing Hulk Hogan.
I don't think I could ask for a whole lot more in life. I'm pretty set.
Yeah, I mean, I was completely floored when I saw this. I couldn't believe that, like, this thing that you said had sort of come to pass. So I wanted to give you props, because as far as I know, Colin Farrell is nowhere near being in a Marvel movie yet. So, you know, one-ups on you there, buddy.
I will take it. I will take those points, and I will take them to the bank.
Yeah, I mean, that. I will also say that movie is almost guaranteed to be terrible. Like, you got to understand.
Oh, well, yeah, that's neither here nor there.
What? I'm so looking forward to that movie. The cocaine-fueled, like, adventures of Hulk Hogan in the 80s and 90s, portrayed by comedic superstar Chris Hemsworth?
I mean, that has the potential to be a good idea, but also Hulk Hogan is producing the movie.
So they're going to cut out all the racist stuff.
It's going to be the Bohemian Rhapsody of Hulk Hogan movies. Yes, is what's going to happen.
God.
Yeah. So anyway, wanted to bring that story up real quick before we actually get onto our film news. And Kyle, then you're going to probably head out of here. So
I'm going to take my leave.
What was that?
I'm going to take my leave.
Thank you, Kyle. We appreciate it.
He just turned to dust. You know, like the hobo from Polar Express.
I was waiting.
All right, I got my one in. Let's do this.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to do film news, we're going to do discussions, and then we're going to move on into our feature review. And today that's going to be the new movie directed by Robert Rodriguez and co-written by James Cameron, Alita: Battle Angel. So we'll get into that in a little while. But right now, let's talk about some film news. It's time to get in some film news, and like I said, we're kind of jettisoning any kind of other film news just to talk about the 91st Academy Awards, which, as of this recording, took place yesterday. Now, I'm going to assume that both of you guys watched the Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
That is correct.
Good. This would have gone very poorly if one of you guys didn't.
For a change, I watched them.
Yeah, so I am glad about that. So, going into the Oscars, were you guys excited or interested by anything in particular?
I was terrified that Bohemian Rhapsody was going to win Best Picture.
That's a fair reaction, I think.
It's been overperforming.
It has. I mean, the movie, it was crazy to watch Bohemian Rhapsody this award season because it's a movie that did not get terrific reviews, but it was a huge crowd pleaser. It made a shitload of money.
And, that's true.
And like I've said many times on this podcast, there's a very – I strongly feel – that you could put Queen music in anything, and that thing will seem good. And Bohemian Rhapsody is the prime example of that. It's a movie that is not very good, but because there's a lot of Queen music playing in it, your brain is tricked into...
I read somebody said they shouldn't have won Best Editing. They should have won Most Editing.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that if Vice wasn't also nominated. Because...
Oh, shots fired.
Yeah, but anyway... so the Oscars happened last night. How did you guys watch them? Were you just at home watching them, or did you have like an Oscar party that you were doing?
Oh, I was just at home. No, you go ahead.
Just at home on the couch.
Okay. You too, Ben?
Oh, yeah, that's my exact story also.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, I actually had a unique experience watching this year. The local indie theater near my house, The Roxy, which I've referenced many times in this podcast at this point, right around the corner from where I live, they were having an Oscars watching party. They were live streaming the Oscars in one of their theaters. So I went over there. They had like sandwiches and cookies and stuff. It was honestly like the ideal way to watch the Oscars, surrounded by people who also, you know, were snarky about it and all that kind of stuff. It was great. So before we get into the actual awards, you know, I think everyone from the moment it ended is talking about the absolute insanity of Green Book taking Best Picture. And that is insane. But before we get into like the actual awards and the winners, what did you think of the actual ceremony, like, as a whole, like, as a watchable experience? What did you think of this year's Oscars? Especially because there was no host this year, and there was a lot of issues going into the Oscars leading into them. What did you think, like, overall, how'd they do?
I think this Oscars was one of the most enjoyable in recent memory. I was very nervous first, you know, with the whole, you know, controversy going on with no host. We were right. going to not have any technical awards. None of the music was going to be, there were going to be two musical performances. And, like, basically they were trying to shave this down to an hour-long broadcast for some reason. Right. And they undid all that, except for obviously no host. But I felt like it had more flow. There was, like, more connectivity. It was just kind of award after award instead of, here's a 10-minute, like, a pizza delivery bit. Or something like we don't need that shit. I would honestly be fine if we'd ever have a host again.
Yeah, plot twist. There never should have been a host. That's what, like, the big twist was at last night's ceremony.
Yeah.
I think it would be fun. Basically, it's what happened here. Cut out, like, Queen. Forget the Queen performance, which, like, okay, that was neat, I guess. But, like, Adam
cool
Lambert.
It would have been cool if Freddie Mercury was still alive, but
he was like a hologram. Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, you know what? Seeing Adam Lambert perform with Queen gave me new appreciation for Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, my mom was like, he should have played the guy, and I was like, no, he shouldn't have. It's like, no.
One guy who's worse at being Freddie Mercury, it's Adam Lambert.
Yeah. Somehow. But so, like, it start, like, after that, it's Maya Rudolph, Tina Fey, and Amy Poehler doing, like, a short comedy bit and then the first presentation. Like, just do that from now on. Just have, like, a 5 to 10 minute comedy bit. They're the first presenter, and then we just move on. I don't need this guy or person to come back and do dumb bits that aren't particularly funny usually, especially at the end of the night, where it's like, get out of the way, man.
I would also watch a broadcast where only John Mulaney and Awkwafina gave out awards.
Yes, 100%. And they're shocked at it the whole night.
They were so good.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
And Tessa Thompson, Michael B. Jordan, they also kind of killed it.
Oh, yeah, they were pretty funny, too. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like the actual presentations and stuff this time around were all, for the most part, like, generally pretty good. And, yeah, I kind of missed, like, having, like, a host monologue or a musical number or something in the beginning. But once the show started and it kind of started to flow, I think it started off a little rocky where it seemed like it was speeding through a lot of awards pretty quickly. And they were cutting off the mic if the acceptance speeches went a little long. But the Tina Fey and Poehler, my Rudolph thing was great.
Again, we are not your host this year, but if we had hosted, it probably would have gone like this.
I'm Freddie Mercury.
Well, I'm the wife. Buster Scruggs, I hardly know her.
Hey, Chad. That's a good one. Hey, Chadwick Boseman, what kind of plans you got later?
These Spanx are so tight, they've entered my Spider-Verse.
I'm Sam Elliott for Sam Elliott Mustache Wax.
Rome is on Netflix. What's next? My microwave makes a movie.
And don't worry, Bradley. After four kids, I, too, have peed myself at the Grammys.
And then, you know, from there, as the show went on, I feel like it really did flow way better than the Oscars usually flow. And I was shocked about that. Like, genuinely, I was, like, you know, so nervous going into this thing without a host. Because the last time they did something without a host, it was 1989. And apparently, like, I wasn't alive then, but apparently that show was a disaster, like, from what I understand.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, apparently I wasn't alive then. I was like, no, you weren't. It's not up for debate.
I am learning this about myself now, that I was not alive in 1989.
My producer's telling me.
Yeah, Colin is whispering in my ear. That's
yeah.
You know, that's a show. If you can look up the opening musical number from that show. It's like Rob Lowe singing with Snow White. And it's bizarre. It's super weird.
Oh,
like,
is that why I kept seeing that thumbnail everywhere. I didn't know what it was.
That was the last time there was a hostless Oscar, so that's why that kept coming up everywhere. And, you know, there have been plenty of Oscars hosts that I've loved. I think Hugh Jackman did an amazing job when he hosted.
I still go back and watch his opening number, like, regularly.
I watch it all the time. This past year was the 10-year anniversary of that opening number, and somebody did an oral history of the opening number. Which was written by Dan Harmon, Rob Schraub, and Ben Schwartz, of all people.
Wow.
And so it's like those three guys just talking about the creation of that number and working with Hugh Jackman. And it's really fascinating to read. And it's for a very niche market, obviously. But that niche is like directly.
Oh, they wrote that opening number.
Yeah, they wrote that opening number.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, and like that Hugh Jackman one's great. I thought Chris Rock did a great job when he hosted it. I also thought Jimmy Kimmel did a solid job when he hosted the last 2 years. Especially
because, yeah, Kimmel was good.
And I think, you know, when that La La Land Moonlight thing happened, you know, you kind of needed a host at that point in time for Jimmy Kimmel to just be there and being like, okay, we got to, like, figure this shit out. You know? Just to have somebody there kind of corralling the chaos. So I think there is benefits to having a host for these kind of award shows. But it worked out this year. I was shocked at how well it worked out this year without a host. And having, you know, just having like presenters pop in with like a 2 to 3 minute bit and then they're gone. So there's, everything felt kind of fresh, you know?
They can also do this format and have an opening monologue.
Yeah.
You can get any comedian to do an opening monologue, roast the crowd, and then like just go on with the show. Better yet, you know who should host is Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel. I would a whole Oscars hosted by him just getting sloppier and sloppier on tequila the whole night.
That would be pretty good.
They gotta wheel him out on the end in like a cart. He's so drunk.
Honestly, there's only one person I want to host next year, and that person is Spike Lee.
Yes. Ooh, nice.
That would be incredible. That'll never happen, but that would be incredible. But yeah, so let's get into some of the actual awards. I mean, yeah, Green Book won Best Picture. Now, have either of you guys seen Green Book?
No.
I've heard of books, and I'm familiar with the color green. But no, I have not seen
all right, so
this particular film.
Neither of you guys have seen Green Book. I have. How many of all the Oscar nominees, I mean, there are 8 Best Picture nominees, how many did you guys end up seeing before the ceremony?
I think around 5 for me by the end.
Really?
Maybe 4. I was bad this year. I didn't, like, care about anything coming out this year.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. I saw all 8 of them. Now, Mike, you saw, I know you saw Black Panther. Like, when we talked a couple weeks ago, you had only seen Black Panther out of the nominees.
Yeah, wait, hold on. Let's run them down for me, Mike.
The nominees for Best Picture were Green Book, obviously, which won, which you didn't see. Black Panther, which you did.
Saw that.
Black Klansman.
Saw that.
No.
Okay, so Vin saw that, Mike didn't. Bohemian Rhapsody.
No.
I was in the theater for that.
You experienced it.
I experienced that one. The Favorite, you saw.
Yes.
But Vin did not.
I wish I did.
Roma, you saw, and Vin, you have or haven't?
I have not.
Okay. A Star is Born, Vin saw, and Mike, I don't think you did, right?
No.
Okay. And Vice. Did you see Vice?
Oh, no. Okay. Sorry, I lied. So I ended up with 3.
Okay. So you saw Black Panther, The Favorite, and Roma. Those are, I mean, those are probably the 3 best ones in here. So you did good.
They were all so good. I thought I had seen all the other ones.
Yeah, fair. They lifted up the others for you.
Yes.
So Green Book won Best Picture, and now Mike, you said you like you didn't see it, but you're angry about it.
Yes.
And I feel like that's the attitude that a lot of Twitter took to the Green Book win. And I will say, like, watching this in the theater with this whole crowd of people, the absolute shock when Green Book won, because it was one of those things where, like, I really thought Roma was going to win this thing, and I wasn't 100% on that because it this year the Oscar race seemed like it was like way more spread out than in other years.
It was so weird.
Yeah, there was no clear front runner, and that actually made it, I think, a more exciting show because, you know, certain things are winning awards, and you're like, oh, could this mean that it's going to win Best Picture and that kind of thing? Like, there was, even by the time you got to Best Picture, there was no clear outcome about what was going to take that award. And then Julia Roberts announces that it's Green Book, and even she seems surprised.
Green Book, what is that? Oh, is that one of the movies? That's wild.
And then as soon as Green Book takes the stage, like Peter Farrelly goes up there, it definitely felt like they were trying to just rush the show into the end. Like, okay, Green Book won. We got to wrap this up before people like riot in the Dolby Theater.
We got to wrap this up before he only thanks Viggo Mortensen a bunch of times.
Yeah, and so Green Book won, and I have seen Green Book, and I genuinely, I think that movie is fine. Like, with a capital F, it's a basically fine movie with a pretty rough script that really coasts on the chemistry between its 2 leads. I would say that it coasts on 2 good performances, but really, it coasts on, like, 1 good performance from Mahershala Ali and 1 fun performance from Viggo Mortensen. And I think there's
can you call racism
and one
fun,
Italian
though?
Performance by Viggo Mortensen.
I'm not calling the racism fun. I'm calling the over-the-top Italian stuff fun.
Okay.
From Viggo Mortensen, where like he's literally like the entire movie, he's just like, "Hey, pizza, sausage, and peppers, forget about it." That's his character.
Fugazi.
Racism, forget about it. You should eat some chicken, and like that kind of thing. That's That's Viggo Mortensen in the movie. And like,
if you recap the movie like that, I would be more than happy to sit through and watch it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that is genuinely what his performance is like in the movie. And the thing is, like, he and Mahershala Ali are good together. That's what I think people are drawn to about this movie. They have good chemistry, and it feels like, you know, a throwback, feel good, you know, kind of 80s style movie where it's like just about, you know, two people of different backgrounds coming together despite their differences and stuff like that. But there were so many.
Yeah, fuck everything about that.
Well, that's the thing. There were so many more vital movies about racism this year that did not paint it as if it's this thing that is fixed already. You know, it's
right.
But Viggo Mortensen fixed it.
I mean,
the white guy befriended the black guy. And he fixed racism. Yeah,
if you go into the Civil Rights Museum in Washington, D.C.,
there's a big picture of Viggo Mortensen.
Exactly.
But, like, as Aragorn.
Somehow.
That's how long ago he fixed it.
That's how they want to remember him.
So, yeah, I think Green Book is, like, probably the worst Best Picture winner since Crash. Like, that's, I think, the easiest one to kind of go back to, which is a similar kind of movie where it's, like, it's, you know, white people pretending they fixed racism kind of thing. I think Crash...
Another Lee got screwed that year.
Which was the Lee movie that got... Oh, Ang Lee. Yeah, you're right. That was a deep cut. Good job, Vin.
I'm entirely deep cuts. Yes. My whole body is made of deep cuts.
Yeah, that was the year that Crash beat Brokeback Mountain for Best Picture, and that was another big shock when that happened. But yeah, it seemed like, you know, there's a lot of different factors that go into a movie like Green Book taking Best Picture.
Can I jump in real quick?
Absolutely.
I mean, before we get too far away, I actually know somebody who knows Ang Lee's son.
Really?
And they were, before the Oscars that year, Ang Lee was like, yeah, I already cleared a space for my Oscar. Like, he was so sure he had it. I felt like I needed to tell that story because...
That is
never wrong. Is somebody missed. It's like he was like Babe Ruth calling his shot, but then if Babe Ruth like grounded out the first.
That is rough. He did win Best Director that year, though. I am pretty sure about that. So
maybe he cleared two Oscar spots then.
He must have. And he did win later on for Life of Pi, so there is that.
So it got filled. It's a happy ending.
Yeah, Ang Lee ended up making good anyway. But yeah, this is probably the worst Best Picture winner since Crash. And it does feel worse because like there were other very good movies about race this year that dealt with it in a realistic way that like didn't sugarcoat it. Even something like Black Panther deals with it in a much more like interesting and realistic way than Green Book does. But like Black Klansman was right there if that was the direction that you were trying to go for, you know? And Spike Lee was right there, you know? And Spike Lee had never won an Oscar in his entire career before last
night. Was that his first one?
His very first competitive Oscar. I think they gave him an honorary Oscar like a little while back.
That's not a real Oscar.
That's not a real Oscar. You're right. But anyway, so they gave him a Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar for Black Klansman, which came right after they gave a Best Original Screenplay Oscar to Green Book. And the like tonal whiplash in that room, like when that happened, was insane. Even they had Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson announce both of them, and when they announced Green Book winning screenplay, you could see like the kind of like confused look on their faces. Like Brie Larson was like, "That can't be right." Like what? And Sam Jackson's kind of like his brows furrowed and he's looking down at it. But then when they announced Black Klansman, I mean, obviously Sam Jackson and Spike Lee have been best friends for a very long time. But when that happened, you know, Sam Jackson's like, "Oh yes, in the house!" And like they like Spike Lee, and Spike Lee runs up there, gives him this great big bear hug, and it's incredible. And like the energy in the room when Spike Lee won that award was like very palpable and awesome. And so you get something like that, and then Green Book takes Best Picture, and just there's a disconnect there. It's very weird.
Yeah, there was. I watched Dave Chen, you know, from the Slash Filmcast and all that, did a Periscope thing on Twitter right after the ceremony ended, and he talked about how he felt that there was this huge dichotomy going on throughout most of the ceremony where a lot of the awards was like, this is the most women that have ever won an award this year. I saw like it was a relatively diverse cast of winners.
Yes.
But there felt like there was a struggle between like the old Academy members that still wanted this kind of like this movie like Green Book to win stuff because it makes them feel less guilty about being white. And then there's this other, you know, the young people that are joining the Academy now and are voting for these diverse movies, like a movie about periods one, like the documentary.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yes. And her speech, like, by the way, was great, too.
Yes. Yeah. And there was a lot of empowerment going on. So it feels like it was, I thought that was a really apt thing that David Chen noticed that there was this kind of struggle going on between the old and new members of the Academy. So hopefully, like, they'll go away soon. I don't know.
I mean, can also say in terms of like, because there was a lot of great representation last night in terms of presenters.
Yeah.
And in terms of the white people that they did pick to be presenters, I liked who they picked to rep us, like Paul Rudd, Brie Larson. Like, solid representations for white people going up there.
They picked the best.
Just good people.
But I should also say that, you know, the way they vote for Best Picture, and throwing this out there, that the Academy has gotten a lot younger and more diversified in recent years. That's been, like, a push they've tried to happen pretty much since a few years ago when there was the Oscars So White controversy, right, where, like, they had no black nominees. That was in, like, 2013, 2014. I forget exactly when. But there was, like, no black nominees 1 year. And so when that happened and, you know, everybody, like, there was this kind of Oscars So White online campaign, like to get more representation at the Oscars, that was when the Academy really started to be like, all right, we got to, like, you know, diversify our ranks and get younger people. And they have strived to do that. And so now the Academy actually skews younger and more diverse than most of the film groups out there, most of the guilds, SAG and stuff like that. Like, it's different than it was just a couple of years ago. But yeah, there is still, like, a contingent of older Academy members that, like, it's still mostly white males that are all above the age, a certain age or whatever. And so there is change in the Academy coming. It's just happening a little bit more slowly in the Best Picture race. But everywhere else, it seems like it's being represented, which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the way you vote for Best Picture, it's a preferential ballot. So you have to rank, like, the movies 1 through 8 in terms of, like, what you would want to see, like, your favorite movie to your least favorite movie. And what happens because of that is that, you know, if, let's say there's, like, a huge, like, a portion of the Academy that loves Roma, right? And they all pick Roma as, like, number one. And say that's, like, 20% of the Academy that does that. But, like, 80% of the Academy hates Roma. And they all listed it last place. That means Roma's basically out. And so what happens is that, like, you have different people choosing different movies as their number one because they're all, like, passionate about one specific movie, like, say, Roma or The Favorite or whatever. But, like, if everybody picks, like, Green Book as their number three or four movie, like, that's the way Green Book can win. And I think that's what happens.
Right. That's what happens a lot of the time at, like, the Tonys or even at the Oscars when two people from the same movie are nominated.
Right, yeah, they split the votes.
Like, three people from The Godfather were nominated, and Joel Grey won that year.
Right. That is some deep cut Oscars trivia. Appreciate that, Vin. Again, with the deep
cuts. Wow, Vinny Deep Cuts. Thank you so much.
That'd be your Green Book name.
I read a great thing about Green Book online, and it was like, I can't wait to see them collect the other colored books and complete the Infinity Library.
Anyway, so yeah, Green Book won Best Picture, and that was a huge shock. I mean, my theater, like, gasped, and, like, one guy in the back was like, "What?" And that kind of thing. It was like,
man was Spike Lee.
Yeah, Spike Lee was not happy about it, and it was pretty great. And
he tried to walk out. Did you hear about this?
I heard about that. He tried to walk out, and he ends up coming back, but he kind of turned his back to the stage while they were all accepting their awards. And then after it happened, you know, they were asking Spike Lee about it backstage, and so he's like, "Are you, like, offended by Green Book's, like, Oscar win or whatever?" And he's just, like, sipping his, like, champagne, and he's like, "I'm taking another sip of this." And he's like, "You know what? Whenever somebody's driving somebody else, I seem to lose. I don't know what's going on." Which was a pretty great response, because, I mean, Do the Right Thing was not even nominated the year that Driving Miss Daisy won Best Picture. And so it's sort of history repeating itself. But yeah, Spike Lee, again, I think the highlight of the ceremony for sure. Like, again, his adapted screenplay speech was great. It angered Donald Trump, which was hilarious because he didn't even reference Donald Trump in the speech. And there was just, you know, moments throughout. I think, like, there was just a lot of great moments throughout the night. And I think that saved it from being just like, oh, it's the Green Book Oscars this year. Like, that's just,
Melissa McCarthy was incredible.
Oh, when she came out as the favorite doing
in that bunny dress?
Yeah. That was pretty great.
I mean, Olivia Colman's acceptance speech for Best Actress was amazing.
Oh, absolutely. She's a gem.
And that was the biggest upset of the night, probably. I mean, other than Green Book winning Best Picture. But, like, Glenn Close seemed like the lock to win that award. Like, everybody thought...
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, nobody saw The Wife. Like, statistically speaking, I don't think any single person has ever seen The Wife. But... and that includes Glenn Close, but
it's a real Schrodinger's wife situation. The movie may or may not exist.
Exactly. But that was like Glenn Close. This was her seventh time being nominated and she's never won before.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so
she was so close.
Jesus Christ.
God damn it. Yeah, so she had never won before tonight, and so she had won a lot of the awards leading up to the Oscars, so it seemed like conventional wisdom that Glenn Close was going to win. But then Olivia Colman won, which was, I think, a shock to a lot of people. I guess it completely screwed up my Oscar ballot, which I filled out, like, a predictions thing. And I got a lot of the minor awards right. Like, I even got all, like, the short film awards right, which, like, are impossible to get right. Wow. But then I fucked it up for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actress. I completely got it wrong.
Damn. Speaking of the short films, the guy that won, Guy Nativ, won for Skin, him and Jamie Newman. Mm-hmm. I've worked with him. I'm an extra in the feature version of Skin that's coming out next year.
Really?
What?
Yeah. So that was pretty wild to see him win that last night.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
Sorry, I don't mean to keep interrupting. I just hear things, and I'm like, well, let's talk about it now before it goes away.
No, that was good. Now people know. When is there, like, a release date for that feature version of Skin?
I just saw it somewhere today. I feel like it's sometime in the summer. Okay. It's a totally different movie than the short is.
Okay.
Like, it's not even the same story.
Okay, that's interesting. I had no idea they were developing it into a feature film, so that's cool.
Developed and finished.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you're a part of it. That's why.
I am. I play one of the background neo-Nazis.
I think I remember you telling me when you got that role, actually. I remember that.
Super fun environment on that set.
Yeah, see, real lighthearted.
Yeah,
really funny stuff.
Any other, like, moments that stood out to you? I mean, obviously, we were talking about Olivia Colman, and the way she began her speech, like, just saying, like, just, like, she was completely shocked when she got there. Like, even she thought Glenn Close was going to win, seemed like. And she even acknowledged that in her speech, and she got up there, and she's like, this is hilarious. Like, what am I doing here?
It's genuinely quite stressful. this is hilarious. Got an Oscar. I have to thank lots of people. If, by the way, I forget anybody, I'm going to find you later. I'm going to give you all a massive snog, and I'm really sorry if I might forget now. But Yorgos, my best director in the best film, and with Emily and Rachel, the two loveliest women in the world to fall in love with and to go to work with every day. I mean, you can imagine, it wasn't a hardship. And to be in this category with these extraordinary women, and Glenn Close, you've been my idol for so long, and this is not how I wanted it to be, and I think you're amazing. I love you very much. I love you all. Thank you. Lindy King, my agent, who took me on over 20 years ago, thank you so much. And Olive and Hildy and Brynna, who made me do things that I said no to, but she was right. And my mum and my dad. And my kids are at home and watching, look. Well, if you're not, then, well, kind of, well done. But I sort of hope you are. This is not going to happen again. And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know. And when I used to work as a cleaner, and I loved that job. I did spend quite a lot of my time imagining this. Oh, please wrap up. Right, okay. And thank you. And my husband Ed, my best friend, I love you so much. 25 years, you've been my best supporter. And he's gonna cry. I'm not. And thank you so much. Fox, everybody, the cast, the crew, Francis, Sam, thank you. Oh, thank you so much, Lady Gaga. Melissa.
So that was great. And as soon as she won, like, my Twitter feed was just like just gifts from her and Hot Fuzz for like like a solid 30
Oh my
minutes.
God, that is her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so that was an awesome moment. And the short film award speeches I thought were all pretty wonderful too. Like, and I love seeing, like, the short film awards. Like, A, like, there was a danger of them not being part of the ceremony. They were a couple of the awards that were going to get cut was the short film awards, and having to air during commercials. But I'm so glad they didn't do that, because, you know, I love seeing these, like, non-famous people who worked on non-famous things reacting to getting their Oscar. You know,
yeah.
It's like the biggest moment of their lives. And, like, and when the guys from Skin won, like, they freaked the fuck out. It was great.
Yeah, they were really excited.
So that was awesome. Is there any other moments throughout the Oscars that stood out to you guys?
I think that every award Black Panther won, it deserved.
Yeah, I mean, it won costume design, production design, and original score. And all of those were well-deserved awards. I would have given an original score to If Beale Street Could Talk, but Black Panther was a good win for that, too. And also, that's Ludwig Göransson, who used to do the score for a little TV show that I loved called Community. I have the season one soundtrack of Community, on my iPod from 2009. And I actually look a little like, doop, doom, ba-doom, 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 boo-boom. I'm like, that's the guy who did Black Panther. That's crazy. He just won an Oscar.
That's wild.
I saw Dan Harmon taking credit on his Instagram.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, calling it the Harmon Oscar bump. It was pretty funny.
That's awesome. But yeah.
Infinity War not winning Best Visual Effects. I thought that was kind of shocking.
Yeah, that was a hot take.
You know what? I actually figured First Man would take that, and I was right. So, boom.
Here's
somebody's good at filling out ballots.
Yeah, wow, that's nice.
Until Olivia Colman enters the picture, but yeah.
Here's one that I didn't see Bohemian Rhapsody, so I didn't particularly have a feeling on this one, but it seemed like, as you pointed out, putting Queen in anything makes it good, so it wins Best Sound Mixing and Sound Editing?
I will give it Sound Mixing. You know, Sound Editing, okay. I will not.
I just think A Quiet Place got snubbed.
I mean,
come on.
A Quiet Place, sure, yeah. That would have been a good choice for the Sound Award. I forget which one.
Roma?
Yeah, Roma also. But, Bohemian Rhapsody, I will give it its Sound Mixing Award. I remember being in the theater. Are you guys, do you guys know the difference between sound editing and sound mixing? I know it's a very pedantic...
Does anybody?
I do.
I, in the lucid sense...
No, are you reading it right now? Because that doesn't count.
You look like... I can see the reflection of your screen in your glasses. He's reading it.
I'm not reading it. No, the difference...
Oh, wait, that's right. He can't read.
Right, I'm like the writer of Green Book.
Wow.
Deep cuts.
Savage.
Anyway.
Welcome to the Green Book cast.
Oh, God, no.
We gotta change the name.
The difference between sound editing and sound mixing is this. Sound editing is the creation of sounds. If you have a sound person in there who's, creating sounds, in a Star Wars movie, they're creating, the TIE Fighter sounds.
Like a Foley artist?
Yeah, something like that. Whereas the sound mixing is the blending together of those sounds.
Okay.
The actual mix of the sound is the sound mixing, and the sound editing is the creation of sound. So most people don't know the difference, including the people who are in the Academy. So it's a weird case where the people who are in the sound branches know the difference between sound editing and sound mixing. And they're the ones who nominate the awards and pick the movies that are nominated in those categories. But then everybody votes on them. So usually the same movie wins both categories, sound editing and sound mixing, because nobody knows the difference between.
I like the one with the music in it.
The We Will Rock You movie.
Yes. And again, I will give it its sound mixing award because, when you watch Bohemian Rhapsody, especially in a theater with a good sound system, the sound is incredible. It's a really good sound mix.
They're
remember
just playing Queen, though.
Sure, but it's not just them playing Queen in the mix.
All right,
it's,
fine. That's fine.
You know, winning sound editing is ridiculous because they didn't create the Queen music that they put in there. You know, but the sound mix, it totally makes sense because, I was even, it was a month after Bohemian Rhapsody came out in theaters, and I was going to see a different movie. And Bohemian Rhapsody was playing in the theater next to mine. And at one point, my theater started shaking, and I was looking around like, what is happening? Is there an earthquake happening outside? Is there a thunderstorm? What is going on here? And it turned out it was the We Will Rock You scene from Bohemian Rhapsody that was just going on in the theater next door.
Wow.
So what you're saying effectively is Bohemian Rhapsody is a movie heard somebody, it's like a kid in class who hears somebody whisper a really funny joke and then says it much louder.
Yes.
And then gets all the credit?
Yeah, it gets all the credit. Yeah, exactly. So I'll give it its sound mixing award, sound editing, not as much. And then it also won film editing, which is a joke. That's the that's insane that it won film editing. Especially, there's a clip going around online of a scene in the movie illustrating why this movie is bad at editing.
Where it's got 15, 16 cuts in 60 seconds.
Yeah, more than that even. It's a lot going on in that scene. And that's something that I didn't even think about when I was watching the movie in the theater, but when I saw it online, kind of just cut out of context, I was that is not great. And I think the reason it won film editing is because they basically had to salvage the movie from, a complete nonsense of parts. Because they had the Bryan Singer stuff, and they had the Dexter Fletcher stuff, and they had to kind of mix them all together. Which, by the way, I think this set the record for movie that won the most awards without ever thanking the director in any of the speeches because of the whole Bryan Singer thing. Like, nobody wanted to say, like,
was he still technically the director of, like, when it came out?
He is credited as the director of the movie, yes. And so because of the whole Bryan Singer is most likely a pedophile scenario, they were like, okay, let's not mention that Bryan Singer had any part of this movie while we're talking about Oscars. And that ended up working for them. And Rami Malek ended up winning Best Actor for playing Freddie Mercury. And that's also a win that I really can't get behind. I know people who have said that Bohemian Rhapsody is not good, but Rami Malek is good in it. And I don't agree with those people.
I am one of those people, just so you know.
Are you one of those people? Okay, we'll talk about that, I think, in your discussions in a little bit. But I really think his performance is, at best, fine. But I think, you know, the fact that they're using Freddie Mercury's vocals for a lot of it, and the false teeth are doing, like, a lot of the work on that performance.
But, like, that's what acting is.
I don't know, man. It's
Christian Bale gained 600 pounds or whatever he did to play Dick Cheney. Like, what is that if not a pair of big fake teeth?
You know, I will say that... you know, not that I think Bradley Cooper should have won Best Actor, but David Chen, actually, who Mike just referenced before, also tweeted out something today that I thought was pretty interesting, where he's like, you know, Bradley Cooper, you know, started developing this movie, cast Lady Gaga, learned how to play guitar, wrote a bunch of songs, worked with a vocal coach to pitch his voice down, like, you know, an entire octave. To be Sam Elliott. But, like, there was clearly so much more work that went into the Bradley Cooper performance than the Rami Malek performance, which was basically, like, putting these false teeth, prance around on stage, and lip-sync to Queen music.
and I just do that for free on Saturdays.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's interesting to see how that kind of played out. But the Academy loves, like, the real-life transformation people, you know? So it was really between Rami Malek and Christian Bale. And Christian Bale has already won before for The Fighter. And so I guess this was Rami Malek's turn, I guess. I don't know. It was a weird choice, I think. And I don't think he's great in the movie. But I know there are other people who will swear by it. But otherwise, I feel like we've been talking for a while, so we'll just kind of get through a few things pretty quick. The song performances. I mean, they played 4 out of the 5 original songs. They did not play All the Stars from Black Panther, because they couldn't... I think Kendrick Lamar wasn't available, so they couldn't do it. But as far as they go, I thought the Jennifer Hudson one was fine, and the Bette Midler played the Mary Poppins song, which was also fine. Like, it was whatever. I really loved the When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings, which was sung by the writers of that song. Gillian Welch and David Rawlings, instead of Tim Blake Nelson and the other guy, which...
That would have been so good.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been great, but I think the actual performance as it was very good, too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the performance that everybody was talking about, which was Shallow, which was Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, which was incredible. I mean, I was kind of floored by how good that performance was. And I liked A Star Is Born, and I've liked Shallow for a long time, but, like, this... Like, that performance, just the intimacy, and, like, it felt like... It felt like it wasn't like it felt like they were doing it. Like
I feel like
it sounds weird to say, but like there was such an intimacy there, and like everybody on Twitter was speculating about it, so I don't feel too bad about it. But like,
yeah, no, I feel so bad for Bradley Cooper's girlfriend.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. Have you seen her? Like, you don't got to worry about her.
Yeah, she's probably fine.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
I feel like when they brought the camera or the piano out, like the camera's behind everybody, and they approach the stage from the audience and stuff, like
Lady Gaga in his girlfriend's seat.
Yeah. Why wasn't the Oscar just on the piano at that point? Like, you don't need to walk away and then come back and do it, like present the award to them. Like, they're the only ones that don't get an introduction. They get the special, yes, like, you know, cinematography thing you're doing. Like, yeah, just give it to them. Just we're like, move on. I don't know.
They were the only people who sang their actual song.
Yeah, that's true.
They didn't get like a ringer to come in.
Yeah, that's true. I was actually kind of disappointed that they didn't get to Emily Blunt to do the Mary Poppins song, because I think that would have been cool. Although I think there are several songs in Mary Poppins Returns that are way better than the song that is nominated. But that's really neither here nor there. But I thought the performance was incredible. And Vin, you just watched A Star Is Born, right? And so, I mean, what did you think of the performance overall?
In the movie or at the Oscars?
At the Oscars. But
I thought they were going to kiss at the end.
Yeah, I was positive they were.
And
like,
I wouldn't have been upset.
Yeah, I thought they were going to just straight up make out at the end. Just start rolling around.
Like,
stage.
If you're going to break up with somebody, go big. You know what I mean?
That's certainly a way to do it.
Yeah, they were fantastic. I love those two singing the song. I love the song. The song bangs. You're 100% right. That song, like, rips. It's so good.
That seems like an overreaction, but okay.
Well, you haven't
that
seen
song.
You haven't seen the movie, Mike. It's a good song. It's a good song.
I saw it last night.
Oh, you did see it?
No, he saw the song last night.
Yeah, you saw the performance. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
It's actually a pretty representation of the movie. It's pretty good. Yeah, it's
honestly,
pretty spot on.
Honestly, I thought that performance was way better than, like, most of the stuff in A Star Is Born.
Yeah, you really don't need to see the movie after seeing that performance. That pretty much, like, if Bradley Cooper had taken out a gun and killed himself on stage at the end of the performance.
Aggressive.
Jesus Christ.
Then you would have, like, seen the movie.
I've already got, like, plenty of fodder for my slash fic later. Don't worry.
Fair enough. All right, so before we wrap this up, I just wanted to kind of shout out a couple of the presenters that were there as well. I mean, we mentioned Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph. They were hilarious at the beginning. John Mulaney, Awkwafina, also great presenting those short film awards. I enjoyed Keegan-Michael Key flying down. With the Mary Poppins umbrella. I thought it was weird that they had Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele in the same room together, but they didn't have them do anything together. You know?
Didn't act like they were best friends. Oh, Wayne and Garth. That was one of the best parts of the presentation.
That was pretty delightful. Like, when it was Mike Myers and Dan Carvey introducing Bohemian Rhapsody, which totally makes sense, obviously. And, you know, when they started just doing, like, lines from Wayne's World, I was like, okay, like, this is kind of funny because I love Wayne's World, but, like, they're just doing this, like, lines, and, like, it's not like it's adding anything. But then, like, they did the lines, and then they kind of did this, like, prolonged chuckle at the lines. like, laughing at the fact, like, they know it's a hacky bit that they're just, like, doing the same lines they did 30 years ago. And so they're just like, for, like, a solid, like, 10 seconds. And that to me, like, redeemed the entire thing. Like, that was the funniest part to me.
Don't hurl, because if you honk, I'll spew. And if you spew, I'll blow chunks. So I shall not hurl.
Good call, good call. But seriously.
So they were great. Also, they had Congressman John Lewis there introducing Green Book. Which was probably, like, the biggest indicator that Green Book was going to win Best Picture in retrospect. Like, I think they felt like they needed to have somebody there who could legitimize Green Book in some way.
Yeah. Let's get the guy that was beaten and arrested during the Civil Rights era and is now a senator to introduce this movie about how white people solved racism.
Okay, again, you didn't see the movie, Mike, and that is an oversimplification of it.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, one white person solves racism.
Exactly. It's specifically Viggo Mortensen. But
yeah, you know, okay, that's
like,
fair.
I don't think John Lewis would have done that if he didn't like the movie, at least. You know what I mean?
I guess that's true.
You know, that's basically where I'm coming from. Unless he came out there thinking he was going to introduce Black Klansman or something.
Which, while you're talking about that, is it weird that they brought out Barbra Streisand and she didn't introduce A Star Is Born?
I thought that was a little odd, and she ended up doing Black Klansman, which I also thought was weird. Until she started talking, and, like, her actual speech was, like, like, her interplay with Spike Lee during that speech was amazing. Like, it was,
yeah,
like, fantastic. And also, Black Klansman is not just about racism towards blacks, but it's also about anti-Semitism. And so kind of having a Jewish person introduce Black Klansman was actually an interesting choice, and I thought it actually worked.
But, like, they couldn't find a Jewish person that wasn't in A Star Is Born. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't another one floating around.
I get where you're coming from, and that is weird. Because they had, what, Serena Williams introducing A Star Is Born?
Yeah. Also strange.
Yeah, I think when I read about what they were doing online, I read this a couple days ago, that they were going to try to do this thing where they had people who you wouldn't expect to introduce these movies introduce them. And talk about how these movies affected them, or, like, how, like, these movies play a part in, like, something that they do creatively as well. And I think some of them worked. I thought Barbra Streisand worked. I thought John Lewis pretty much worked. And then you had odd ones, like Queen Latifah introducing The Favorite. And it's like, did they just bring her out there so they could make a pun about the name Queen? Is that what they did?
Because I don't know who wrote the Oscars this year, but man, did they hit every obvious thing to say.
That was a commitment to the bit. But I think the weirdest thing was when Tom Morello showed up to introduce Vice. Which was you know, on one level, I get it. You know, because Tom Morello was in Rage Against the Machine. Rage Against the Machine hated George W. Bush. You know, by the transitive property, Tom Morello introducing Vice sounds like it makes sense. But they didn't even, like, his speech didn't even, like, connect it back to that in any, like, meaningful way. It's just like, hey, I'm Tom Morello. I make angry songs, and this movie's angry. Here's Vice.
Yeah, basically.
And then it made me angry because I was like, you had Tom Morello in the room, and you couldn't get Rage to play the opening instead of Queen and Adam Lambert, like
that would have been incredible.
That would have been amazing. But,
he seems like the kind of guy that could have introduced Black Klansman and been like mad about it, and it would have been awesome.
Could have been, yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that there was some odd stuff throughout the Oscars, as there is every year. The Oscars are this weird hodgepodge, and I saw somebody say that, like, it's so weird following the Oscars. I love the Oscars. I genuinely do, because I just enjoy, like, the whole prospect. Like, it's a celebration of movies at the end of the day, and as somebody who really enjoys movies, that's something that's up my alley. But, you know, they get it wrong a lot of the time, and it's a weird case where it's, like, it is relevant enough where it does affect the movie industry, what wins Oscars and what gets nominated for Oscars, but it's also like a joke enough where it can be like a massive train wreck and everybody laugh at it. And so it's this weird fine line. And I think for the most part, they did pretty well this year, except for the Green Book thing.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
I saw Anne Hathaway posted a picture. It was like, to everyone presenting today, don't worry, it could always be worse. And it was a picture of her and James Franco.
yeah.
It was a whole thing.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, at least they can laugh about that.
Yeah, that was a rough Oscars when that happens. And that's kind of the thing. Like, I think, you know, a good host is probably better than no host, but no host is better than bad host. And I think they went with no host this year, and it worked out. I think we've talked about the Oscars for long enough, guys. Unless you have any other, like, last thoughts about them before we want to wrap this up.
Oh, God, please, no.
It was weird. Barbra Streisand presented Black Klansman.
You just can't get over it.
She was in A Star Is Born.
I will say, I did love Richard E. Grant's reaction to when Barbra Streisand came out in the room. I don't know if you noticed that.
It was pretty great.
Like, he, like, freaked out, and that was pretty great. That was very, that was a fun moment. But anyway, yeah. All right, that is the Oscars. They happened last night, and I think for the most part, solid stuff. Fun awards, pretty good speeches. Not the greatest ending, but overall, like an 8 out of 10, I would give it, like, as a ceremony.
I just remember Julia Roberts' final thing where she was like, I guess that ends the 91st Oscars. and that's basically how I felt.
Which was definitely, that definitely felt like, okay, this is probably an area where you might need a host in the future. Yeah. Just to have somebody to say, all right, good night, everybody, instead of having Julia Roberts come back out and be like, all right, I guess I'm doing this.
I guess Green Book won.
Yeah. all right, that's the Oscars. Let's move on into our discussions, starting right now.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for our discussions here on Film Bookcast. So, Vin, you are the guest of honor today. What do you got to discuss? I know it's probably some Oscar stuff, right?
Oh, for sure. That bumper gets better every time I listen to it. I'll never not enjoy sitting here. It was a long one this time.
It's the same length every time.
So I've saw two of the Oscar movies.
Yeah.
I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, and I saw A Star Is Born, and I saw Black Klansman. But I liked Black Klansman, so I don't really want to talk about that.
So it doesn't even count as an Oscar movie because it was good. So it's...
Yeah, it was like a quality film with a strong message, and I was very moved emotionally by it and upset by it because it talks about upsetting things.
Yeah,
and it did its job. But Bohemian Rhapsody was less good. I was so afraid. I saw it with my buddy PJ, friend of the podcast.
yes, I mean,
and we sat and we sang Queen songs in the back row, and we watched just like not even a movie. It's not even like a real movie, I feel like. There wasn't a clear first, second, and third act. And I get that people keep ragging on Rami Malek because, like, he lip-synced everything. But sure. That's acting. That's, like, what acting is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really just the lip-syncing thing. I think, you know, it's a weird thing. I think his performance as Freddie Mercury is basically fine. But, like, it feels like an impersonation. You know, it doesn't feel like he became Freddie Mercury. It feels like, I mean, you didn't see Vice, I don't think. But, you know, I love Sam Rockwell to death, but I thought his George W. Bush was, like, serviceable in the movie, you know? And I thought Rami Malek was serviceable as Freddie Mercury. I didn't think he was great. Honestly, and I talked about Bohemian Rhapsody a while back on the podcast. And basically what I said then is, like, the movie is okay overall. I basically think anytime it's Queen just performing as a band, it's pretty fun. And anytime it's anything other than that, I was like, this is a worse version of Walk Hard, but without the jokes. Like, that was...
Yeah, I think you're giving the movie even slightly too much credit, but, like, I get what you're saying. And don't get me wrong, I will champion for Christian Bale. I love that man's work. I think he's a genius. I agree he probably should have won, even though I haven't seen Vice. I liked Rami Malek. I thought he gave a very nice performance. And he's a very interesting, like, soft-spoken young man.
I'm glad that we're giving Oscars to soft-spoken young men now. That's the criteria.
That's just a side comment. That has nothing to do with the actual thing. But now to what I saw very recently, which was A Star Is Born. You know Bradley Cooper directed that picture? I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you caught wind of this.
Yeah,
but,
I've heard there's 100 people in a room. 99 of them don't believe in you, but one of you wants to direct a Star Is Born remake.
If 99 people in a room and one of them is Bradley Cooper, you're going to win an Oscar for best original song. The saying goes something like that.
Something along those lines.
I would have bet money that she was going to say that last night, and I was kind of upset she didn't.
Yeah, well, I think she probably would have, but at a certain point during the awards circuit, they started making jokes about it. Like they did it in the monologue for the Golden Globes. Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh like referenced it a couple of times.
Well, she referenced it a couple times in every interview she did for this movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so I remember when they joked about it at the Golden Globes, I was like, that's a really niche joke. Like that's something the only people who have watched Lady Gaga interviews for A Star Is Born will get. but then it started to become like a meme online, and then like it, and so I think at that point she's kind of stopped saying it, which was
Look, if you say it once, awesome. That's a powerful message.
Sure.
But if you say it once for every person in the hypothetical room, it becomes slightly less powerful. You know what I'm saying?
No, I get it.
I think Lady Gaga's an incredible actress, and I think she gave an amazingly heartfelt. I really felt for her and her performance.
Yeah.
Same with Bradley Cooper. I think their silent moments in the movie were really something special. And Sam Rockwell is. I've never seen Sam Rockwell.
Sam Elliott, you mean?
Right. Sam Elliott. I've never seen Sam Rockwell Elliott in anything that I didn't like them in, both of them.
Yeah.
Because they're one person now.
Yes.
I liked A Star Is Born because of the performances. I just don't think it was particularly well directed or like. It feels more like his movie than her movie, and I took issue with that.
I would agree with that. I think it's a pretty competently made movie, and I think Bradley Cooper is giving a good performance. I think Lady Gaga is doing a very good performance, too. Sam Elliott, I think, blows them both out of the water. He's incredible in the movie.
Sam Rockwell Elliott? Yeah.
Sam Rockwell
Elliott. He's fantastic.
And honestly, like if anybody won Best Supporting Actor last night, I mean, obviously somebody did. It was Mahershala Ali.
Weird. Nobody won.
But I wish that Sam Elliott had won that award. I think he was probably my favorite out of those that were in the nominations.
Oh, also, Andrew Dice Clay gives an incredible performance in A Star Is Born.
Right.
And you're looking at me as if you think I'm a psychopath.
No, I didn't say anything.
Your eyes said everything.
I think he was good too. Yeah, I mean, it's been a few months since I've seen it now, but I came away from Star Is Born basically liking it. I thought it was good.
I thought it was perfectly passable. That's my diagnosis.
Yeah, I think if A Star Is Born had won last night, I would not be mad about it.
Oh yeah, I remember when the previews came out, I was like, oh, this is the movie that's going to win the Oscar.
Yep.
Right.
And then nobody cared.
I feel like people cared real hard for like 2 or 3 weeks after it came out. And then, like, it disappeared.
Yeah, I think it might have just come out too early in the Oscars voting season. You know, it became one of those things where it's like, this movie opened up to, like, wide critical acclaim, commercial success. Shallow was playing on the radio nonstop. And, like, people were like, yeah, Star Is Born, it's amazing. But by the time Oscar voting started, like, 2-3 months later, everybody was like, well, you know, Star Is Born, like, I've soured on the movie now, whatever. And I'm going to vote for Green Book. And, like,
you know, I'll show them with their new age ideas about letting the old ways die. I'll give you what for. You know what I really think is that I'm remembering now what my actual opinions on the movie were.
What?
If the movie was like 20 minutes shorter and they cut out a lot of the middle section, if they did her rise and his fall like more montage-y than actually giving them the full scenes, I think it would have played a little bit smoother.
Maybe. I remember thinking, like, honestly, I remember thinking a lot of it felt kind of rushed.
Really? Interesting.
Especially with her rise. Because there's, like, a point where, like, she's, like, recording songs and, like, hey, she kind of just walks out on stage and it's like, all right, and now I'm a superstar. But that's fine because that's, like, a kind of fantasy movie musical thing. I could buy into that. But then there's stuff where it's like, you know, oh, you're going to be on SNL now. Oh, you just got nominated for 4 Grammys after she's been working for, like, 6 weeks. And it's like, there felt what, like there was...
You're getting married?
Yeah. It felt like there was no, like, concept of time in the movie. Like, everything felt like it was happening very, very suddenly. Even though the movie did feel a little bit long. You're right.
Yeah. Oh, so thank you. And I was always happy to see Dave Chappelle. I think that's really all I have to say about A Star Is Born. In terms of other movie news slash plugs, I'm going to rifle these off real quick because I feel like I'm running real long-winded today. Dragon Ball Super Broly, go see it. Amazing movie. just to follow you guys up, because I've talked about the first two, I, for some reason, watched the third Godzilla movie they released on Netflix.
Oh, really?
The end of the trilogy. And much to my surprise, just like the first two, it was terrible. it's nonsensical. They just made Godzilla boring. I don't know how else to say it than that.
Right.
I can talk about it now, I believe, because there's been some print about it. I was in a movie at a speaking role in a SAG film with Nick Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello. Nick Manganiello, his brother, produced it.
Okay.
My scene was actually with Joe Manganiello, which is pretty crazy. It's called Shoplifters of the World. It's a movie about the night the band The Smiths broke up. And the other movie I'm in called Slate Yourself just had its upstate New York premiere and it's going to have its city premiere on March 2nd.
Nice.
Yo.
Dude, that's awesome. Making moves. That's great.
I'm having fun. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you can plug those again at the end of the show when we do our plugs as well.
But most importantly, go see Dragon Ball Super Broly.
Are you in that too?
I am. I play everyone. In my own edit, which I will be releasing online tonight.
Your own redub.
Perfect. Love it.
I do some very offensive Asian accent work.
Oh, no.
All right. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
To round out the Best Picture category, I have The Favorite.
Abigail. If you forget to load the pellet, the gun fires, makes a sound, but releases no shot. It is a great jape. Do you agree?
Yes.
Maybe we will think of a use for it one day. Sometimes it is hard to remember whether you have loaded the pellet or not. I do fear confusion and accidents. I'm sure people will be careful.
Which, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos's new movie.
Yes.
And this is, like, just... I haven't now... Okay, I know you yourself are a Yorgos Lanthimos aficionado.
I have seen everything he's done since Dogtooth, I believe. And I've been following his career since Dogtooth came out, yes.
Yes. So this is the first one I've ever seen, first film of his that I've ever seen.
Really? Oh, man.
Yeah.
What?
I know I'm missing out.
You know what? Actually, this is probably a good first one to watch because it feels like it's his most accessible movie.
It's the first one he didn't run through Google Translate.
Right. No, I mean, that's true.
That's fair. Now, he didn't write this, right?
No. This is a script. I forget the names of the actual screenwriters, but this was an existing script that Yorgos kind of came on as a director for.
Okay. And just like, damn, son, I am in love with everything about this movie for the most part.
Yeah.
The performances, you know, Rachel Weisz, Emma Stone, Olivia Colman, like, powerhouse. And it employs one of my favorite things, which will tie into my other discussion, is just like a moving camera. There are so many times where, you know, people will walk into a room and the camera will pan with them across the whole room or, like, we'll do a dolly shot whether they walk down a hallway or whatever. That just makes the movie feel so dynamic and it's fun to watch, which is incredible because most of this movie is walking and talking in a giant, like, palace,
yes.
Which could be so boring, you know, if it's done with so much of this Adam McKay style, maybe not, where it's like we're just going to put a camera in a thing and let two people talk and improvise kind of stuff. That's, you know, specifically comedy stuff, but where it's boring to watch. And this is so weird. There's such weird, like, fisheye lenses used. Everything is just, like, cartoonish in the best way at the same time. Feels very grounded and intense, right? That's, like, a lot of intrigue and backstabbing going on.
Right.
So I just had a blast with The Favorite. It's a real good time. And then the other movie I saw is Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's new joint.
Right, on Netflix now.
On Netflix now, yeah. And this also, you know, Cuarón, master of the one take. So there's a lot of really long takes, moving cameras.
Yep.
Even if it's edited that way, I'm not really sure. You know, edited to seem like one take.
Right.
Kind of thing. And this is like a French New Wave throwback, like slice of life drama.
Yeah, totally see that, yeah.
Just following the life of Cleo, like the housemaid of this Mexican family in like 1971.
Yep.
And just the upheavals going on around them and the family drama. And Yalitza Aparicio, I think is her name?
Aparicio, I think.
Aparicio,
something along those lines, yeah.
Was nominated for Best Actress, and she was the one I was really pulling for, who plays Cleo in this. Like, I'm glad Olivia Colman won, but Yalitza is just, like, it's such a breakout, right? Like, I think she's, I read that she's a kindergarten teacher or something like that. Like,
yeah,
she's
this is her first acting role, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
She's Brendan Gleeson. He's a teacher before he was. He was a teacher before he was.
That's amazing. Deep cut. Vinny Deep Cut.
Return.
Hey, Vinny Deep Cuts.
Vinny Deep Cuts over here.
Vinny Deep Cuts.
That's your
Viggo Mortensen. Podcast name.
Yeah. To be played by Viggo Mortensen. Vinny Deep Cuts.
Oh,
hey, I'm watching Roma here.
Throw the bones out the window.
But yeah, Roma, I was like so emotionally invested in everything going on in this movie. And it feels like, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff where it's like nothing happens. It's so boring. Because like a lot of shit happens, but it's very like deeply emotional and personal stuff. It's not like action plot point moving forward happening. And just Karan is such a like has such a finesse to get in movies to get the audience engaged by like I was saying, just like simply like moving a camera in a certain way can make something powerful. So like I'm glad that he won best cinematographer, best director, and this one, Roma won best foreign language film.
Right. So Cuarón got to go up 3 times at the Oscars last night.
Yeah. Seems like it was shaping up. Seems
first person ever to be nominated for 4 awards in 4 different categories.
Yes, that's true.
Wow.
Yeah, and actually, the very first time a director has won for shooting his own movie in cinematography. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, this is the first time he's done that too. I think usually he works with Emmanuel Lubezki, so this is the first time Cuarón kind of did it on his own. And yeah,
him and the guy who did Revenant and Birdman, whose name I can't think of,
the guy I just said, Emmanuel Lubezki.
Oh, is that his name?
Yes.
He didn't know. That's not the guy who directed those, though, right?
No.
Oh, no, that was Iñárritu.
That's who I was trying to think of.
Yeah, but Lubezki shot those movies.
And he won
Oscars for shooting those movies, actually. And also,
that's funny.
Sorry, and he also won an Oscar for shooting Gravity, which was the other Cuarón movie that Cuarón won director for back in 2013.
Oh, right. I thought Alfonso Cuarón was the guy you're talking about.
Oh, Iñárritu? Lubezki? Who are we talking
about? Yeah, I thought. Okay, I don't know.
I don't know.
Third base. I know is that Alfonso Cuarón is definitely the guy that played Carlton on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, right?
That's Alfonso Ribeiro, and Alfonso Cuarón is not a person.
Not with that attitude.
You're thinking of Alfonso Soriano, who I think was a New York Yankee?
There's too many Alfonsos.
Colin, check that. You'll know. Anyway, Roma's great. And I was going to say, it seems like it was shaping up for a Best Picture win. Best Director, Best Cinematographer, Best Foreign Language, the best movie not in English. Like, it seems like it's shaping up to win Best Picture, and then we get fucking Green Book. But yeah. And I had this movie spoiled for me by accident. Like, I read a thing on Twitter about what happened, or it's like an audience member's experience with something going on. So, like, it didn't directly spoil a plot point, but it sort of did because it was, like, about that, this Twitter post I saw. And it just, like, filled me with dread. And it's one of the one time that I think spoiling the movie might have, like, had a positive effect on me. I don't know.
It was ready for it. I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
What is it?
I don't want to spoil it in here.
Spoilers, man.
It didn't prepare me for it. It made me on edge waiting for it.
Okay.
And made so much more tension in this movie that is otherwise not, like, tense. You know, like, I don't know how to... It's not a thriller.
There are certainly tense scenes in the movie, but yeah, it's not... Yeah, it's not a thriller. It sort of reminded me of Itu Tambien, actually, the way that movie is kind of this, you know, kind of loose, kind of just collection of scenes. But every once in a while, it'll cut away to like, oh, this horrifying shit is also going on.
This other stuff happening.
Yeah.
So I really loved Roma, but yeah, and The Favorite, both great movies.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Roma was my favorite of the movies that was nominated last night, and I wish it had won. It seemed like it was shaping up to. Yeah. I mean, it would have been a groundbreaking choice, I think. It would have been the first foreign language movie to ever win Best Picture. Only a few have ever been nominated in that category. And it would have been a Netflix original winning Best Picture. And I feel like that might also have worked against it in some cases. You know, I think there are contingents of Hollywood that are like, you know, Netflix is sort of destroying the business of movie making in some ways. And it's not really destroying it, but just changing it in ways that we're not comfortable with at this point in time. You know,
right.
A few years down the line, who knows?
I did see that, or you know, there are reports of like certain blocks of Academy voters that specifically voted against Roma,
right.
Like put it last or voted for other things in favor of it because it's a Netflix movie. I think it was also one of the first movies starring indigenous people or starring an indigenous character that's been nominated or something like that. Or
something like that, yeah.
Something involving that. So that would have been awesome, like a representational win also.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that is Roma, and it's great. I actually got to see that in the theater when it came out.
I'm jealous.
I know. same theater that I watched the Oscars in, actually. And yeah, it's worth seeing in a theater if you can, because I think it is a very deliberately paced movie, and so I think putting yourself in that kind of theatrical environment helps it out a lot. But it is available on Netflix right now if you want to give it a whirl. It's great. Vin, you should watch it, is all we're saying.
Great, I'll kick it on right now. You guys hang on for, what, 2 hours?
All right, later, man. Anyway, I got a few discussions I wanted to bring up. I'll try to go through them as quickly as possible, but I've got 6 movies here, so we'll see what
Mother of God.
First off, I have a couple of Netflix joints, actually, that just came out this month. Velvet Buzzsaw and High Flying Bird. Now, Velvet Buzzsaw is the new horror movie from director Dan Gilroy, the guy who made Nightcrawler a couple years ago. And this one also stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Rene Russo, both back in this movie. And, you know, the trailer for this movie hit a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, and like people saw it and went nuts. They were like, holy shit, director of Nightcrawler is back. This movie looks insane and crazy. And the movie itself is like fine. I was
oh no.
There's a lot of good stuff in there. You know, I think there's some creative, it's much more of a like traditional horror movie than I think Nightcrawler is, which is more of the psychological thriller vein. And you know, this is basically a slasher movie set in the world of art criticism. So it's a very unique movie, and it looks very good. I think the cinematography is very good. I think Jake Gyllenhaal's given a really fun performance. Toni Collette's also in it, by the way. She's good in it. And a couple of, there's this actress who I'd never seen before named Zaw Ashton, who I thought was probably the highlight of the movie for me as a performer. She was very good. John Malkovich is also in it.
Living that Netflix life now.
He's living that Netflix life, yeah. Billy Magnuson from Game Night is also in this movie, too.
Is he the younger dude?
Yeah, the kind of dim-witted like younger dude, yeah.
Oh, I like him.
And he's in this movie, and basically the idea is somebody uncovers this art that is basically some guy dies in his apartment, and somebody goes over there, and they discover that he's got like this whole collection of art that he's made his entire life that's never been made public, and it's amazing. It's next level art, like it's never been seen before. It's groundbreaking stuff. So they start displaying it in their museum, but the art starts to kill them. In this very, very
yes.
few, yeah, that's basically the idea of the movie.
It's the ring.
Otherwise. It's kind of the ring. Yeah, it's kind of the ring. And so there's some fun kills in there. You know, there's creative uses of that art to kill these people. But, you know, for the most part, it's just kind of a standard slasher thriller with, like, a unique setting. And sometimes that's enough. It was enough for me while I was watching it. I was enjoying it for the most part. And Jake Gyllenhaal's given a fun performance. So that's Velvet Buzzsaw. And then the other Netflix movie I wanted to reference was High Flying Bird, which is the new movie directed by Steven Soderbergh. Which just came out 2 weeks ago on Netflix, and it sounds like Mike, you didn't even know this movie existed.
Why? Yeah. What? How did I not know about this? I feel so let down.
I haven't heard about it until right this second.
Yeah. Steven Soderbergh shot this movie pretty quickly. He shot it on an iPhone, which was much like
the Madman.
Yeah. His last movie, he also shot on an iPhone, which was Unsane. But this is a completely different genre than that movie. That movie was a horror movie, psychological thriller. This is more of a drama starring Andre Holland as a basketball sports agent. And the idea is that he is like the agent for this one basketball player, and he's trying to get him back on the team, and it's in the middle of this NBA lockout. And it's sort of plays like a heist movie, honestly. Like, it's just a really sharp script. Andre Holland is great in it. I think the iPhone cinematography, for the most part, works. There is some stuff that I thought was pretty iffy, especially whenever there's like a lot of light in a room. There's like that backlight that you get on an iPhone that wasn't entirely taken care of in this movie. But for the most part, it works. And, you know, Andre Holland's great. Zazie Beetz from Atlanta and Deadpool 2. She's in here as his assistant, and she's phenomenal in the movie. Bill Duke from Predator is also in the movie. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a pretty solid drama that has a lot of very funny moments. There's another... remember in Logan Lucky when there was that extended Game of Thrones joke that
yes.
threw in there? Yeah, there's another Game of Thrones joke in this movie. I don't know.
What?
Yeah, not as big as that one, but there's like a fun reference to Game of Thrones that I enjoyed in this movie. So that's High Flying Bird. I think if you like Soderbergh movies, it's worth checking out. It plays a lot like his heist movies. So It's definitely cool. And then I have a few other movies to talk about. First is a movie that I've been trying to see for a very, very long time, and it's finally available to rent right now. It is called Anna and the Apocalypse.
The ladies, why don't you get behind me? Yeah, make it possible that one.
The streets are chaos and the outlook is dire. Time for a hero to step into the fire. The world's a jungle and we're close to extinction. This is my moment and I'll fight with distinction. We'll want to stay focused, keep your concentration. Will you have fun? Use your imagination. No time for weakness when the undead are waiting.
And it's directed by John McPhail. This is a Scottish movie that is also a musical that is set at Christmas. That is also a zombie movie.
I've heard of this.
Yeah. This played at Fantastic Fest in like late 2017. And I've been hearing about it like nonstop since then. So I've been dying to see it for a long time. It's available to rent on Amazon right now, finally. And it's very good. The soundtrack is fantastic. The performances are a lot of fun. It's a pretty funny movie. The zombie action is pretty creative. I will say, I think the choreography for some of the songs is like a little weak. But you know, for the most part, like there's just this vibe and energy about it that I just really liked and responded to. And it's just a very fun movie to watch. Like, I feel like I'm probably going to buy the Blu-ray and just kind of like, it feels like it'll be a very rewatchable movie. So it's worth checking out, and I would recommend that you guys check it out as you can. I feel like it's one of those movies that I'm going to show to people a lot, just because it's such a weird movie, and it's going to be a movie that, like, you know, your non-film friends will not know what it is until you show it to them, and they're like, guys, you got to watch this. This is amazing.
Trust me.
Yeah, it's why we're film geeks in the first place, right? It's to show our better taste to other people that we know.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Anyways, that's Anna and the Apocalypse. Also wanted to reference another horror movie, horror comedy hybrid. Happy Death Day to you.
Oh, right. That came out.
That did come out. did either of you guys see Happy Death Day?
No.
Okay. I liked Happy Death Day a lot. It was a surprisingly fun movie. And that was a movie that I was pretty skeptical about going into it. I thought, you know, it's whatever. It looked like Groundhog Day, but a horror movie. And, like, that could be fun, but, like, the trailers didn't sell me on it. But I saw it, and it ended up being pretty good. I think this movie is actually a little bit better than the first one.
What?
And it does that by really expanding the concept. It is not a horror movie anymore. It went, like, full sci-fi for the sequel. And, like, that first movie was really, like, this is Groundhog Day, but a horror movie. And now it feels like it's really riffing on Back to the Future 2. And they even reference it directly in the movie. And there's actually, even in the musical score, there's one moment where the main character, Tree, kind of stands up and, like, you hear the kind of Back to the Future sting that, like, doo-doo-doo. and it was very good. But, yeah, it's, you know, it's very funny. It really, it explains why the things that happened in the first movie happened. And that sounds like it could be annoying and grating, but it actually ends up expanding the world in interesting ways.
Damn, now I gotta watch both of them.
And all the performances are a lot of fun. It's just a really entertaining movie that Blumhouse did another good job with. So that is a Happy Death Day to you. And then I also saw Fighting With My Family, which is the new movie directed by Stephen Merchant. And Vin, you kind of like looked up as if you were pretty excited about this movie.
I had to bargain my way into Alita Battle Angel because the person I was with wanted to see Fighting With My Family.
Oh man, yeah. So, are either of you guys like wrestling fans or like familiar with wrestling? I feel like Vin, you've seen some wrestling.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Hard no.
Cool. Okay, so Mike's not, but Vin is. So Vin, you're familiar with the Paige, I assume, right? Paige, the WWE diva. Okay, I was only into wrestling for like a brief period of time, and that was when I was in college because my roommates were super into wrestling, so it would just kind of be on all the time. So you just kind of get into it because it would just be there. And the period of time that I was into wrestling, which was probably about a year and a half, 2 years, was when Paige first entered the scene in the WWE. Mm-hmm. And she was like immediately one of my favorites. And so this movie, Fighting With My Family, is about Paige, the WWE diva, and her kind of journey from, you know, wrestling in her small town in England, and getting signed to the WWE and kind of working her way up to WWE diva status. And it's directed by Stephen Merchant, who was the co-creator of The Office, the British Office, with Ricky Gervais. and who was in Logan a couple years ago. Remember that? When he was in that? That was weird.
Yeah.
he played that guy that couldn't be in the sun. The mayonnaise man.
Yes, exactly. The mayonnaise man is his official character name.
That's,
right?
Yeah, weird. Yeah.
and I enjoyed this. You know, it's a pretty solid biopic. It, you know, it's a pretty standard biopic for the most part. It hits the beats that you expect a biopic to hit. But, you know, because of Stephen Merchant, there is, like, this kind of dry sense of humor throughout the movie, which I enjoyed. It's also produced by the WWE, so it always, like, paints the WWE in a good light. But The Rock is in this movie playing himself, and he has a couple of very funny scenes. Big Show and Sheamus show up in this movie as well.
What?
Yeah, it's solid stuff. And, you know, the movie ends with Paige's first match in the WWE, which I saw when it aired live on TV. So I was like, hey, it's so weird to, like... Like, it's weird that I'm at the point in my life where they're making biopics about things that I lived through. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
It's only going to get worse.
I know.
But yeah. They're also, the amount of time between something happening and there being, like, a biopic about it is getting smaller.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
but yeah, so Fighting With My Family, I think pretty solid stuff. Nick Frost also in this movie, pretty funny. Lena Headey plays his wife also, and she's also pretty funny in the movie too. And yeah,
great Italian actor Vinca Vaughn in there.
Wait, what?
The great Italian actor Vinca Vaughn.
Sure.
It's Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn is in the movie.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. yeah, Vince Vaughn also in this movie, and yeah, he gets some solid lines in there too. Yeah, it's mostly a comedy, honestly, but there is some like emotional moments, and like it's really about the relationship Paige has with her brother, about how he was trying to get into the WWE too and didn't make it, and it's some solid stuff. So that is Fighting With My Family, and then finally, wanted to bring up one last movie before we get into our featured review. And that is How to Train Your Dragon 3, The Hidden World.
I can't believe you saw that.
I mean, you're a big How to Train Your Dragon fan, right, Mike?
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I mean, basically, like, when we were doing this episode, it was like a toss-up between doing Alita and How to Train Your Dragon. And I knew I was going to see both. And I knew I basically held all the cards and was like, whatever movie I pick, that's the movie Mike has to go see. And I picked Alita.
Who's for Vin? We did it for Vin.
We did it. That's true.
Big Animu fan.
Yes, the big anime fan over here. But anyway, if you're a fan of the first two How to Train Dragons, I think you're going to enjoy this. I enjoyed it a lot. I think it is the weakest of the three movies, but it is a solid conclusion to the series. It doesn't feel as epic as maybe it should. You know, I feel like, you know, you've created this big fantasy dragon epic series, and this one kind of feels a little bit more like a hangout movie, and it kind of skips a couple of beats getting to its ending. But the ending works. It's affecting. The movie looks amazing. Like, the animation's gorgeous. Roger Deakins is still a consultant on these movies and the shows. And the score is still amazing. Like, the score for the How to Train Dragon movies, some of my favorite scores of the past couple of years. Just the it's great. but yeah, and, you know, as far as DreamWorks Animation goes, like, How to Train Dragon has been, like, to me, their crown jewel. Like, as much as we like to joke about Shrek 5, as much as we like to say, like, oh, yeah, we can't wait for Shrek 5. Like,
which is coming out.
Which is absolutely coming out at some point.
You gotta believe.
We gotta believe. We gotta keep hope alive. But the How to Train Your Dragon series has been, like, a step above everything else DreamWorks has done. And this movie kind of serves as a conclusion to all of them. And it's gonna be sad to see it go, I think, because they really have kind of set the bar high for themselves with the series. Also, just want to throw out there that there's the character Tough Nut or Rough Nut or whatever. In previous movies, he was voiced by T.J. Miller, which they... recast in this movie.
Was it Jason Mantzoukas? Because he replaced him as the mucus also.
It was not Jason Mantzoukas. That would have been great. It was some other guy. It was like not like a voice actor. Oh. But it was weird because like the movie, I didn't know they had recast T.J. Miller. And in retrospect, like I was like, oh, well, they probably did. But as soon as that character started talking, I was like, wait. Because it had been a really long time since I'd seen either of the How to Train Dragon movies. So I was like, isn't that character T.J. Miller? Like, I'm like 80% sure that's supposed to be T.J. Miller. But like his voice sounds just off enough where I'm like, I don't think that is T.J. Miller. and he gets a lot of scenes in the movie. Like, there's like big extended comedy scenes with that character, as if like T.J. Miller was supposed to be doing those scenes. But then they recast him, and it's like, okay, well, we have these scenes already set, but we gotta get another.
We've already animated them, so
but we gotta get this other actor to do it now. So I mean, they worked. Like, the scenes were funny. It was just like odd because the voice did sound like slightly off because T.J. Miller has a very distinctive voice. And so it was just a little weird, but obviously I get why they recast him. It was, you know,
was it the bomb threat or the,
there was the bomb threat, the allegations, you know, take your pick, man. That's basically, but yeah, so that is How to Train Dragon 3. I think if you enjoy the other two, you're going to enjoy this one. And finally, I think we can now move on into our feature review of Alita Battle Angel.
I'm not your daughter. I don't know what I am.
I do. You're the most advanced weapon ever. But that's just a shell. It's not bad or good. That part's up to you.
I do not stand by in the presence of evil.
She is threatening the natural order of things. Tonight is not a game. It is a hunt. I need you to destroy a girl called Alita.
You made the biggest mistake of your life.
And what's that?
Underestimating who I am.
That was in the trailer for Alita Battle Angel, the new movie written by James Cameron and Leia Calgridis and directed by Robert Rodriguez. The movie stars Rosa Salazar, Christoph Waltz, Kian Johnson, Jennifer Connelly, Mahershala Ali of Green Book fame.
you son of a bitch.
Ed
Academy
Skrein,
Award winner.
Two-time Academy Award winner, Mahershala Ali, by the way. Yeah. Just throw that out there. Ed Skrein is in this movie, Jackie Earle Haley, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Alita Battle Angel reads, a deactivated female cyborg is revived, but cannot remember anything of her past life and goes on a quest to find out who she is. So, guys, I've been hearing about this movie for a very long time. I don't know if you're aware of this, but James Cameron has been developing this thing since around 2003.
What?
Like, way before Avatar even came out. This was going to be his... Yeah, this was going to be his next project after Avatar. Like, he was planning to direct this movie before he got kind of sucked back into the world of Pandora. He's doing 4 Avatar sequels now that are totally happening.
well, released the same day as Shrek 5.
Well, the Avatar movies are actually filming, so like, I think they will actually happen. Hopefully, 2020. We'll see what happens. But
good thing they capitalized on when people cared about Avatar.
Hey, you know what? You say that now, man, but I have learned many times, never bet against James Cameron, because the dude always succeeds. I don't know how he does it, but like, it always works.
Draws dollar signs next to things.
that does help. So anyway, he was supposed to direct this movie like shortly after Avatar came out, but he ended up kind of going back into the sequels thing. So Robert Rodriguez ended up coming on board, and he's been working on this for a long time, too. And the result, I think, is that this is a project that feels like it has James Cameron's influence under Rob Rodriguez's style. And I was all about it, you guys. Like,
wow.
I am shocked by how much I like this movie. But we'll get into what I thought like in more detail in a bit. Vin, you are the guest here. And the reason we had you on this podcast today, in fact, is because you are the anime guy of our group. You know a lot about anime. You are talking about anime all the time. You gave a shout out to Dragon Ball Z Broly before.
I don't recall. I don't know what you're talking about.
I cannot confirm or deny it this time. but like you've talked about anime on this podcast in the past, and so when Alita was coming out, which is based on a manga, I was like, you know, the sensibilities of this movie feel like they're kind of in Vin's wheelhouse. So I'll have Vin on the podcast to talk about it, and I'm curious to hear what you thought.
I wanted so badly to love this movie.
oh boy.
But so I've never seen such a I knew going in, because it was based on a manga, that they were going to top load this thing with exposition. You know, you can always expect like a pivot scene in the movie where they're going to do all the exposition. That was like the whole first act of this, though, I felt, was just like nonstop bombardment of exposition, and I was so like just like, oh my god, this is rough. And then act two started, and I was like, oh, these action sequences are incredible. And I really just like... Hold on, I have words. So, I thought that... what's her name? Rose Salazar?
Rosa Salazar, who was Bird Box, by the way. She was the girl who ends up with Machine Gun Kelly in that movie.
Oh my god, the cop, right?
Yeah.
I thought she gave a really nice, really thoughtful like performance. And then I felt like everybody else around her was just phoning it in.
Really interesting.
I thought Christoph Waltz, I was so disappointed by what he was doing. Now, see, I do have a question I got to ask you guys, but I can't until spoilers, so I gotta hold off on that.
Okay.
Sorry, I got kicked by Mike. I got to hold off on that because I don't know if it's gonna spoil the movie if I ask it now.
Sure. Okay.
But I just felt like she was really good in a... Oh, and Jennifer Connelly. I thought she was doing some really nice stuff. right? Is that Jennifer Connelly?
Yes.
Okay, your silence made me be like, oh, who's the actress that looks like Jennifer Connelly? It's not Jennifer Connelly. And then Ed Skrein, I thought it was great as the robot with the sharpest sword in the world.
Yeah, I thought he was great in this movie too. So it sounds like you were pretty lukewarm on Alita, is what it sounds like, right?
Yeah, but there's an extenuating circumstance that I have to wait to tell you until we get okay. to spoilers.
All right, interesting. Mike, let's go to you. What was your overall take on Alita Battle Angel?
I feel like, I had a decent amount of fun with this movie. I liked it, I think, mostly. It's like Vin kind of was saying, I dip the toe in the pool of anime, so I'm familiar with some of those kind of tropes and stuff that, you know, comes with that baggage, or the baggage that genre comes with, or medium. So, like, I was on board. I think a lot of the character designs were really cool. You know, Ed Skrein, with, like, his weird, like, sort of tattoo robot thing going on. Like, he looks cool. Like, the cyborg stuff is fun. This, like, weird cyberpunk world was cool. And I like some of the world-building stuff. And I like the action. I think that, like, that second act that Vin talked about where it's just like, here we go. We're fucking doing it, finally. Yeah. You know, it's called Battle Angel. Let's fucking do some battles, yo.
Yeah, let's battle, Angel.
Let's fucking battle. And we do that, and like that was a lot of fun. It was really creative and inventive the way they are able to use this. You know, fucking cyborgs do inhuman shit. Let's do it.
Yeah, she's badass.
And it was awesome. But, like, some of the dialogue in this movie is just, like, laughably bad.
She tries to give him her heart, literally.
I mean, no, like, I was kind of okay with that, because it's like, you're a cyborg that has, like, no conception of what that might be human, like, in a human sense. So, like, okay, mm-hmm. you don't remember what it's like to be a person kind of thing.
Yeah, fair.
But, like, yeah, let's, like, you know, on the nose, because I guess that's how anime works.
It is, yeah, that's true.
But, you know, this movie is, like, part action movie, part, like, 90s extreme rollerblade movie. It's part, romance, but, like, teen romance, and I honestly forgot this was, like, a Robert Rodriguez movie.
Yeah.
And so then, like, the credit rolls where it's, like, directed by Robert Rodriguez, and I was like, that's why this feels like Spy Kids.
It looks just like Spy Kids!
It looks just like it. It's, like, part Speed Racer, part Spy Kids. Like, I didn't really get what was going on for some of it within that regard, like, the world-building shit, which was fine, because, like, it's anime stuff and manga. But then that, like, the final scene happens, and I just got so mad, and I was like, you ruined, like, it left a bad taste in my mouth. I don't like this movie now. And I've come off that. I cooled off a little bit, but it definitely, like, brought me down. I was feeling pretty high up until that last, like, 5 minutes. Nah, I think I checked out.
So am I going to be the lone champion of Alita Battle Angel on this podcast today?
TBD.
I will tell you, I am not an anime guy. Like, I'm the guy here who probably enjoys anime the least out of all three of us. Sorry, Vin. But yeah, I appreciate some anime stuff, and I've gotten more into some anime stuff over the past year or so. I started watching some Miyazaki movies. I saw like Perfect Blue, and I saw some movies that I had been meaning to see, and there was a lot of good stuff. I liked a lot of stuff, but I'm not even remotely what I consider an anime person. And I was pretty skeptical about this movie from the trailers and stuff. The trailers were not doing much for me, and I haven't liked a Robert Rodriguez movie since Planet Terror. Like, he's you know, it's been 12 years since that movie. He's had 5 movies since then, and I didn't like any of them. All of them I thought were pretty rough. But Alita, man, I was just... Like, from moment one, I was just like, this movie is going for it. It's the same kind of, like, balls-out sci-fi territory that movies like Jupiter Ascending or Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets go for. But I feel like it ends up doing it so much better than those movies. And I think part of that is that it does center around Rosa Salazar's performance as Alita. And she's doing very good work. And I think the VFX used to create Alita are insane. They're incredible. Like, they're absolutely stunning. And I thought that was not going to work. Looking at the trailers, like, you know, the big eyes and stuff, it looks weird and uncanny.
Well, that's what her eyes actually look like. They CGI them smaller for every other movie she's done.
For real life.
Yeah, man, that's a surprise. I did not know that. But they pulled it off, and Rosa Salazar's given a great mocap performance. And, Mike, you referenced some of the dialogue in this movie, and I would agree with you that there is dialogue in this movie that does not work. It's clunky. And I will say, you know, James Cameron is a co-writer of this movie, and that is a facet of all of James Cameron's scripts. Like, that's something that you get in most James Cameron scripts. Like, yeah, like, if you look at Titanic, you look at Avatar, there's clunky dialogue in those movies. But the thing is, you know, people give James Cameron shit for his dialogue all the time. But when it comes to, like, screenplay structure, like, dude's shit is airtight. Like, he knows how to craft a story. And I think that is at play in Alita Battle Angel. The movie works. It paces very well. It builds and builds on top of itself. And it feels like, even though it feels like it's this, you know, big, huge universe that is designed to tell multiple movies, to me, it felt like the arc of this movie was complete. And so it hints at other stuff. Yes, okay. I know, 100%. At least as far as the character arc is concerned. Maybe not the plot of the actual, like, you know, the overall plot. There's, like, a larger plot at work here. But as far as the characters are concerned, like, there's an arc that this movie goes through, and, you know, we'll go through, I guess we'll have to go into it in spoilers. But it feels complete to me. You know, and it obviously ends on, like, a little bit of a cliffhanger. But for the most part, I think this movie really does, like, feel like one complete story.
Can we talk about the scene where they're on the roof and she's got a new body and she's like, you know, I have new sensations and I have new touch sensors that are better than the other ones all over this new body. And he was like, close your eyes. And I was like, is this dude about to finger blast this robot on his roof? Is that what's going to happen right now?
I feel like that's teasing spoiler territory.
That is teasing.
Oh, that's like oh yeah, it's a touch. It's a tip. I guess you see it in the trailer though, kind of. Not that's the fair, yeah. Transition.
Yeah, well,
no, you're right. I'm excited about the robot finger banging.
You are referring to the romantic, like, kind of stuff between Rosa Salazar and Hugo. I think the love interest name
Hugo,
is.
Hugo, yeah.
And sure. Well, that's the thing. I think the movie does drag a little bit when it's focusing on their love story. That's the part where, like, it just not, this isn't doing much for me. I think they tried to do something interesting with the Hugo character, making him, like, a guy who sells robot parts for money, but it doesn't really work. And those scenes have a very, like, yeah, YA, young adult quality to them. That ultimately drags those scenes down. But, like, this is also a movie in which Christoph Waltz wields a giant rocket hammer to kill robots, you guys.
And one of those things was far more believable.
It was the rocket hammer.
Of course.
that's the thing. Like, Christoph Waltz wields a giant rocket hammer, and it doesn't even crack, like, the top 10 of most awesome things in this movie. It felt like...
I lost my shit when that happened. Right? I was, like, so funny. It was incredible.
Like, there's just so much... They throw so much shit at you. And that could absolutely be a mess, but I feel like the movie... fully realizes its world. It fully, like, buys into what it's doing, and because of that, like, I had a blast with it. I think the world building and, like, the characters that they create and the designs, like, I was just so on board with everything I was seeing in this movie.
I do like when a movie tries to introduce, like, a new sport.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
And it reminded me of the thing from Road to El Dorado, that game that they play in that movie.
Yes, yes, yeah.
They got to put the ball in the hole in the side,
like,
of the wall.
The armadillo or whatever.
Yeah, the armadillo switches with the ball, and, like, nobody notices that they're cheating. Yeah. Different. We'll cover this in our Road to El Dorado episode next week.
I mean, to me, it felt like a cross between Rollerball, from the movie Rollerball, and pod racing.
Right.
So there's a little bit of a pod racing element to that as well.
Well, it was really funny. They kept saying Motorball, right? Is the name of this thing. And I kept thinking they were saying murder ball.
I thought that too.
We're just, like, going for it. We're doing it. Like, all right. This is the dystopia I want to live in. And it's like, no, it's called motor ball. Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I loved motor ball. I had so much fun watching motor ball. I thought that shit was incredible. Like, I loved everything the way that looks, the way it played on screen. Like, I love that whole section of the world. I thought that was, like, incredible. Like, I want a whole movie just about motor ball. You know, I want to be able to play the VR game about Motorball right now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty dope. There was something very Ready Player One about those sequences, too. But, like, I didn't hate it like I did with Ready Player One.
I mean, I thought Ready Player One was fine. But I think you're right that there is, like, a little bit of the same element to that. Where it's just everything's, like, so busy and there's so much shit happening at once. But I think this movie shoots it in a more interesting way. Everything feels more clear. And again, it just feels more fully realized than all that.
Also, just to be clear, I totally, like, I will champion movies like Jupiter Ascending. I love that movie. Like, movies like these are in my wheelhouse.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I should love Jupiter Ascending, and I don't. And I'm a huge Wachowski fan. But that movie doesn't work for me for a variety of different reasons, but this movie did. I can't really explain it. There's just something about, like, these big sci-fi movies that swing for the fences, that, like, some of them will swing for the fences and miss, and some of them will swing for the fences, knock it out of the park, and I think Alita did for me. But I'm definitely, like, I would say, like, it's a pretty divisive movie. I think it has, like, a 60 in Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. So I totally get where you guys are coming from, because it's not like it's a universally beloved movie where I have, like, two, like, Philistines in the podcast who are not that I don't
I would definitely see this movie
podcast.
Again. Actually, I want to see this movie again.
Do you?
Yeah. You and that all, I will I all will be revealed, don't worry.
Okay, interesting. All right. It sounds like you have a lot to say in spoilers.
I do.
Which we'll get to in a second, I think. But I will give a shout-out to the supporting cast of this movie. I know you weren't a big fan of Christoph Waltz, but I thought he was pretty solid. Jennifer Connelly. Mahershala Ali seems like he's having a lot of fun in this movie. And I'm sure this will be his third Oscar role come next year.
I want to shout out, someone made a comment on Reddit that I saw about Mahershala Ali in this movie and about how much he looks like Blade. And yes, we need to add Blades to the MCU. Mahershala Ali needs to play him.
He's the guy, man. He's the guy. And the action sequences in this movie. I mean, we kind of touched upon them a little bit, but, like, they are uniformly excellent. Like,
When she's fighting Jackie Earle Haley, good.
That like sewer fight they have under the underground, it's great. And, like, so the whole good. Like the bar fight with her and the bounty hunters, it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, that's really fun. The guy with his dogs.
Yeah, who was that guy? Was Jeff Fahey, who was in Planet Terror, by the way.
Interesting.
Cool to see him again. But anyway, all right. So it sounds like, Vin, you have a lot to say in spoilers. So it's bursting out of you at this point.
You'll see. It'll all make sense.
Okay,
man.
And Mike, do you have anything else to add before we move on to spoilers?
For the most part, I think I'm like sort of enjoyed this movie. I just sort of got soured on it. So I'm interested to see what Vin's revelation is going to be.
All right, let's move on to spoilers then for Alita: Battle Angel, starting right now. All right, spoilers for Alita: Battle Angel, starting right now. And Mike, I got a joke for you that is really only for you because it's related to the Complete Works.
Go on.
Hey, Mike, this week I watched a movie about a scientist who creates a robot substitute for his dead child based on a Japanese manga. The robot child discovers that they have miraculous fighting abilities that they didn't know they had, and they use those abilities to attempt to connect the world of the floating city in the sky full of the 1% to the poor masses living on the polluted, overpopulated surface worlds. But enough about Astro Boy starring Nicolas Cage.
I thought you were talking about Upgrade.
Oh my god.
It's a callback to when I ruined your joke in Venom. Man,
that might be the deepest cut of all that you've done today, Venom.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So that's my my Astro Boy joke. So Vin, you have been bursting at the seams here, trying to say something, and you had to wait until spoilers. So go nuts, man. What do you want to say about
Guys,
Battle Angel?
How does this movie end? I had to leave the theater.
What?
What?
I had somewhere to be. The only time I could see this movie was at the 11:50 showing. Like, between a film audition that I was at for, like, 3 hours and then something else I had to do.
Oh,
so
no.
I showed up, like, 5 minutes late and had to leave, like, 30 minutes early.
Oh, my God.
So I have no idea how this movie ends.
What? This
has never
happened
before. In spoilers.
I still wanted to be on this podcast so bad. I made PJ come with me. I paid for his ticket because I knew he had no interest in this movie, and we were only going to see, like, some of it.
You should have just told me.
Nah, man, this is way funnier.
God damn it.
So the last thing I saw was that dude Hugo got stabbed, and then we had to leave.
Okay, all right, so you were maybe, like, 15 minutes away from the ending. It's not that bad.
Really? Yeah. Oh, then I'm shocked because it did not seem like they were getting to the close.
It was getting there. So, all right. So I guess we have to fill Vin in on what happens at the end of this movie now. So the movie ends.
I hope I get asked back on.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see what happens, man.
Let me know how the reviews come in for this episode.
God damn it. All right, so the movie ends with Hugo appearing to die, right? He gets stabbed. And then what happens is they are able to save him. They put his head on a robot body. But then he tries to run up to Zalem, the city of the sky, because he's like filled with rage and anger and vengeance. And as he's running up there, the Nova, the kind of overall big bad,
they've been talking about him the whole time.
Yeah, that's like possessing Mahershala Ali the entire time. Who, by the way, is played by Edward Norton.
What?
Twist. Yeah, you find that out.
No yeah. way.
At the end, he takes off his little goggles, and it's Edward Norton. And it's like, oh, shit! anyway, he doesn't say anything. He's still silent the entire time. But anyway, so he's running up to Zalem, and Alita gets word that he's doing this, and so she runs after him. And when she does this, like, she catches up to him, and they're both on like, the pipe that's leading up to the city. And they're having this argument, and it's like, they're never going to let us up there. And it becomes this, like, class warfare commentary for a second of, like, the 99% versus the 1%, which I was very into. I was really into that whole thematic arc. But anyway, as that's happening, you see Edward Norton watching what's happening from above, from his, like, you know, little lair. Mm-hmm. And he sees them on a camera, and he pushes, like, a button. And then this, like, these blades come out of the pipe that they're standing on. And they are coming down, and Hugo has to try to jump over the blades in order to get out of there. But when he does that, he completely, like, slices in half. And so Alita's able to grab his arm and, like, kind of hold him over the edge. But she is also falling because she's, like, kind of stuck there with the sword. And Hugo eventually, like, lets go, and he falls to his death.
It's a real cliffhanger situation.
Well, pole hanger situation.
Well, I meant the Sylvester Stallone movie.
Okay.
Cliffhanger?
Cliffhanger.
Okay, yes, fair enough. Anyway, so that's when Hugo actually dies, and so Alita kind of returns to the surface world, and it cuts to a few months later, and she's become, like, a pretty big star in the motorball arena. And then it kind of ends with Edward Norton looking down on her, and she's, like, kind of raising her sword to the sky, and it's kind of, like, this revolutionary, like, this will be, like, she's become, like, this sort of revolutionary, and she will go on to defeat the forces of Zalem or whatever. And that's kind of how the movie ends.
Good to know.
Did that fill you in sufficiently enough, Vin?
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised. I thought I missed a lot more.
Yeah, so fair enough. So, I mean, Mike, what did you think of the ending, since I can't talk to Vin about it?
Well, you can talk to me about it.
Okay, yeah, we can talk to you about it. But it sounded like Mike was very angry about the ending, and so I do want to get his take on it.
Yeah, it just felt, I was so mad that we spent all this time building up, right? Like, Alita gets this new, like, battle body, like, the greatest weapon ever created, you know, kind of thing. Like, when she finds the Erm technology, like the Martian technology or whatever that she was originally created for.
Yes.
And she gets the sword, the sharpest sword ever, and all this stuff. And, like, she's becoming, like, she's remembering her battle training and, like, all this stuff. So we spend all this time building up to her becoming powerful enough to get to Zalem and fight Nova and defeat him. And then, LOLJK, it's a extreme 90s fucking rollerblade movie. That's where we end. Like, I mean, as awesome as Motorball was...
Right.
Like, and we have that powerful moment, like, when Hugo dies and she has to let him go, or, like, his arm breaks or whatever happens, and, like, she says, I love you, right? Like, you know, she asks earlier, can, like, a human love a cyborg and all this stuff. So we have, like, yeah, we do have the like, you did, I guess you are correct, that we have, like, the close of a character arc, but, like, the movie is just ramping up to the, like, plot ending. To just cut it short, and then we montage, like, you know, a time lapse, days going by, and then she's now a motorball star. So, like, it just felt like it just felt abruptly ended. Like we were building to something, we were finally getting there, and then rug pulled out, and it just ends with this, like, you know, no dialogue thing, her pointing the sword up at Nova. So, I don't know, it just made me mad that, like, we spent all this time, and it does feel like kind of a long movie. It does drag a little bit sometimes, like, you know, with the romance stuff, where, like, maybe we could have cut some of that out and got the plot conclusion instead of building a cinematic universe in this movie.
See,
I hope they get a sequel.
I think it might. It did okay in the U.S., but it's doing pretty well overseas, so it might get a sequel. If there was a sequel, I do hope James Cameron is involved, because I do feel like, you know, the combination of James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez is kind of what makes this movie work for me. But to me, it's like, you know, the movie ends, and yeah, it hints at a larger plot. And like, obviously, they reference Nova, and they had Edward Norton in there as, like, hey, I'm Nova, and I'm the big bad. Like,
yeah.
I'll see you in the next movie. But, like... Well, actual lines of dialogue, by the way.
Pretty much.
I have nothing to do but believe you, so.
Fair enough. But, like, the way it ends, to me, it's like, you know, Alita starts off as this completely naive girl who doesn't know anything about the world. You know, she wakes up, knows nothing about her past life, and she discovers these abilities. And, you know, the movie has these kind of allegories of, like, a girl finding herself just as a human, as a person, you know, finding her first love and losing it and all this stuff. And it turns her into this hardened warrior badass by the end of the movie. And so to me, like, the arc feels complete. Like, there's an arc that this movie takes, and it goes, you know, Alita from the beginning to Alita at the end. She's a completely different person. And her place in the world and in the universe is completely different than where it was at the beginning of the movie. And it feels like, honestly, if there is no sequel, it feels like a good place to end the series on. Like, it feels like it's a good conclusion point where you know that she will do those things, but the reason she did those things, it's all laid out in this movie.
I just feel like if that's the case and they ended it there and there's no sequel, they shouldn't call it Alita Battle Angel. They should call it, like, Alita Sports Angel. Rollerball
well,
Angel.
There's also plenty of battles in this movie, though. Also,
there are a couple battles. Well, there were fights.
Would you not consider them battles? There is a huge battle on the moon that's basically a cutaway.
It's like, yeah, it's referenced, but we don't really see that battle. We just see like 99 on your left, right. And then she's like, "I was on the moon."
Yeah,
Nell's in the red room.
That's part of the thing I love about this movie. It has this, you know, it throws in just this insane gonzo concept of there was a war on the moon, and it's like a throwaway thing. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, this movie is filled with these, like, insane ideas, and they're just, like, tossing them out there. Like, yeah, whatever, it's the war on the moon. We got other shit to do. Let's go.
We fought the Martian.
This movie's also pretty, like, gruesome.
Yeah, there's some intense stuff. There's some crazy body horror shit that happens in this movie. I don't know if you might have missed this part, Vin.
No, I saw that dude get cut in half.
I'm not talking about that part. I was talking. I don't know if you saw what happened to Jennifer Connelly's character.
No, what happens to her?
Oh, yeah. Man. Jennifer Connelly kind of teams up with Alita at the end. She kind of like joins her, and then when Alita goes to face off against Mahershala Ali, and Jackie Earle Haley is like gigantic dude. Mahershala Ali like opens up a cabinet and reveals that Jennifer Connelly's character's body has been harvested for parts.
And
she was a human, like she wasn't a cyborg. And so he opens up a cabinet and there's like a brain in a jar with two eyes like attached to it that are moving around.
Yeah.
And it's fucked up. It was great.
A lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I was super into that.
Oh, of course.
that was like one of the things though, like this movie, like it felt like it didn't quite know what it was. Right. It has awesome action. It has grotesque body horror, right? Like Jennifer Connelly's character saves Hugo by attaching his head to Alita's blood. Like it's like it's a whole weird, gross medical thing.
Is that like a metaphor for them doing it?
I guess probably. Maybe. But also at the same time, like it has this like weird childlike or children's movie romance plot and like weird young adult stuff. I don't know. It just felt like those two things didn't quite match for me.
That's I guess fair, but also like I was on board. Like I was just there's so much shit going on.
I was into all the like dark stuff.
Right. And like, I do think the young adult stuff, like the romance between the two kids, like it drags the movie in some points. Yeah.
Everything changed the night she got finger blasted on that roof and you couldn't put the lid back on that box.
Jesus Christ.
She saw the world for everything it was.
Maybe there was no going back in this episode.
There's so much regrets happening right now.
Guys, I'm really sorry. I thought this would be fun.
It is fun. No, it's fun, Ben. You're okay. You're all right by us.
I'm just joshing.
A couple of wild cameos in this movie also, besides Edward Norton, who pops up at the end. I don't know if you noticed this, guys, but Michelle Rodriguez was Alita's trainer in the flashbacks, Gelda.
Oh, I thought she was the robot she fought in the red like robe in the beginning.
Oh, no, that was Aiza Gonzalez from Baby Driver.
Oh.
Yeah,
right on.
But the funniest cameo to me was when they showed the motorball champion, and it was Jai Courtney.
It was, yes. Boomerang, Captain Boomerang, right?
yeah, Captain Boomerang Suicide Squad. And it felt like it was a weird situation where it was like, who's the motorball champion? And it's like, oh, it's that guy. And it cuts over, and it's Jai Courtney. And it's like, what?
What was playing himself.
Yeah. Yes, playing himself as a weird robot. it was so weird. It was like that happened, and I was like, "Was there? Was Jai Courtney just like hanging around on set one day and they're like, hey, come on in. We'll get you in
Robert
the movie.
Rodriguez one day was like, hey, you know who I'm weirdly friends with? Is, did you see Suicide Squad? Yeah, I know Will Smith and he's not around, but the guy that played Captain Boomerang is.
Yeah, bring him in, sure.
Yeah, and the set guy's like, all right, fine. Like, whatever. So, yeah, a couple of cool cameos there. So I wanted to rough through it. And also Jeff Fahey, who we mentioned before, from Planetary, plays McTeague, the hunter-warrior with a pack of robot dogs. And that's part of what I love. Like, all those, like, hunter-warriors and bounty hunters, they all felt like weird, distinct characters.
Yeah.
That you would not see in, like, a normal movie. Like,
you got a screwhead, dog guy.
Yep.
Asian guy. robot guy.
Yes, robot guy. He's my favorite character.
I did really love the, like, hunter-warrior, like, plot and, like, that aspect of the world. It felt very, very, like, Blade Runner in some
way.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. I think this movie touches on some really awesome cyberpunk and, like, neo-noir things and uses them in fun ways. So.
Seems like a great way to make money, also, being a hunter-warrior. Every one of them seemed like they're profiting.
Except for all the death stuff, I guess.
But, like, you know, it's money.
That's, yeah, true.
I couldn't believe they killed that dog. Oh, that killed me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then she puts its blood on his face. That was weird. She's like, I'm going to put your blood on my face, dog.
Like that part of the movie is when I was like, fuck, yes, we're here. Battle Angel, we're doing it. Like, this crazy shit is happening. Like, we're off the deep end. And then, like, it pulls the rug out from under me. Yeah, watched in the fucking shallow or whatever. And then we go, like, the fight in the underground. Thanks for catching up, Ben. the fight, like, in the underground was insane. Yeah, yeah. Like, I loved every part of that. With the, like, most badass line, after she plunges her hand into his eye.
Oh, like, yeah, after she's been dismembered.
And breaks her hand off in his eye.
Yes.
Like, that was so badass.
That was cool.
Top 10 use of an F-word in a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Top 10 anime betrayals. Like, great.
Yeah, no, that whole fight scene, probably the highlight of the movie, the bar fight leading into that big fight with Jack Gurley in the sewers. But, like, you're acting as if there's only, like, a couple of action scenes in the movie. I felt like there was a lot.
That's just the best one.
Oh, yeah, that's the best. Okay, good. As long as we're on the same page there. But, like, the scene where, like, you know, she's racing in the motorball race in the attempt to try to win and get money for so that Hugo can go up to Zalem or whatever. And it turns out that all of the other motorball people are trying to kill her at the same time as they're racing. I thought it was awesome. Like, just combined, it combined motorball, which is my new favorite sport, and the action sequences, which have been dominating the movie, and it was awesome. And then, like, the way that race just, like, broke out into the streets, and, like, she had to, like, chase down to find Hugo and save him and stuff, like, that was awesome. It was cool.
Also, you gotta figure it would have been a much more effective plan if Mahershala Ali was like, hey, if one of you kills her, I'll pay all of you, rather than being like, I'll pay the person who kills her.
That's how these movies always go, though. It's not like, you know.
It's a villain critique. It's a planned critique. I'm just saying I would be a better villain than.
You know,
but then you're spending a lot more money.
Yeah, but you really got to get this girl. You got to be dunzo here, you know? She's a threat to everything you've built.
Yeah, true.
You know what I thought was a weird, like, plot hole thing that doesn't really matter in this movie, but I noticed it? Like, we have that big bar fight in the Hunter Warrior. I almost said hunter-gatherer. Hunter-warrior bar. And they are all very distinct, unique characters, right? And one of them is one of the people in the motorball thing.
Yeah, Screwhead.
Maybe.
No, it's the lady with the big, like, finger head.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, wouldn't Alita recognize her? Like, I'm pretty sure that, like, you just fought her. Wouldn't you know that she's also...
You're not going to remember the lady you met named Screwhead with the screw in her head?
Okay, so you're saying she sees her in the bar fight and then she sees her in the motorball race, that's what you're saying?
And doesn't recognize her, yeah. I was like, wouldn't she know that that person's a hunter warrior and, like,
you know,
it takes the phone call? I mean, it doesn't matter at all.
There was, like, a lot of people in that bar, dude.
That's fair.
And they were all fighting each other. Like, you know, it's...
Yeah,
you know,
but they were expressly introduced.
Yeah, she's like...
End screen is like, this is dog guy. And this is Screwhead. And this is other guy. And I'm Nicholas Holt, almost. I thought it was Nicholas Holt. I didn't realize it wasn't until you said it.
My name's Francis in Deadpool.
I gotta say, Ed Screen is surprisingly great in this movie.
He's really good.
He's somebody who I have always thought was, like, fun. Like, I've never thought about Ed Screen in my entire life. I know he was on Game of Thrones for, like, a season, right? He played Dario, I think, originally.
Oh, my God. He's that guy?
Yeah. And then he was in Deadpool. And then he played Deadpool. I think he like replaced Jason Statham in the Transporter movies or something.
Yeah.
But he's like he's never been more than like serviceable to me. You know, I've never remembered Ed Skrein, but like I thought he was great in this movie. He was less.
He could have been the Jai Courtney of this movie, but turns out
Jai Courtney was the Jai Courtney. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And I, you know, really enjoy just like the way he introduces all those bounty hunters and like that kind of like bit. He's just playing it really big and menacing. And I love that. And then I loved when he gets come up into the end where Alita slices his face off. It was
so good.
He was the Shakespearean villain this movie needed.
Exactly. All right. So is there anything else about Alita Battle Angel you guys wanted to reference in spoilers, or should we start wrapping this thing up?
I really just want to talk about Christoph Waltz's Rocket Hammer for a second.
Absolutely.
The floor is yours.
So there's that scene, right? Like, it's set up that we think he's the serial killer that's been, like the sort of Jack the Ripper character, like, killing women and taking their, harvesting their parts and all this weird shit.
Yeah.
Which also, you know, more weird body horror stuff. So thanks, manga. And, like, we see him, it's, like, this kind of, like, montage of him putting a weapon together, like, stuff clicking together, and then, like, whoosh, he wields it. This giant fucking hammer.
Yep.
I lost my shit in the theater. Well, yeah. Like,
I thought he was putting together a gun. Did anybody else think that?
Well, we see a shadow, right? We see that woman get killed the first time, and we see, like, what looks like a scythe, or, like, this weird long shadow. Like,
right.
It's like, oh, it's going to be a scythe for some reason, I guess. Nope, it's a fucking rocket hammer.
I should also say I was also late to the theater.
So when did you show up?
Oh, boy.
Hugo gets stabbed.
The first rocket ball scene, maybe?
Oh, wow. Jesus Christ, dude. So you... How much of this movie did you see? Like an hour?
No. It was a 11:50 showing. We got there at 12:10. And then we left at like 1:50.
You got there 12. Usually there's like 20 minutes of previews at least.
That's what I was banking on too, but not today.
Oh man. All right. Well, this is a professional podcast with somebody who only saw part of the movie we're talking about today.
Killed it.
I really wanted to come through for you guys, and I didn't want to ask you to push back the recording date. And it was literally the only time I could have seen the movie.
It's totally fine, man. It's totally fine. We appreciate you being on the podcast anyway. It was a lot of fun talking to you about Alita, even if you didn't see the ending.
I know. I really appreciate you having me on for my last time on the podcast.
Now, well, I was thinking, you know, since we're going to be doing Avengers Endgame at some point, you know, we had you on for Infinity War,
so I'm like grandfathered in. You have to ask me back.
I was going to say, if you want to come back through Endgame, I would appreciate it if you watched the whole movie that time.
TBD. No, of course. This was a weird outlier.
Yes, yes.
Well, funnily, you know what I was actually doing that day was I was trying out for the HBO show that's going to be filming in upstate New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was at an open audition for it, and we got there at like 8 a.m., and we were there until like 11:30, and I said, we have to rush to the theater right now.
Man, what is the HBO show that's filming there? Is it a new one?
It's a Mark Ruffalo show. I don't know what it's called. It's a miniseries.
I think I heard of that, actually.
It's like they're looking for super Italian people.
Okay, well, you fit the bill. That's
Yes, the poster boy for Ireland went in there, and I was like, fugazi.
I'm Vinny Deepcuts.
Vinny Deepcuts. Oh, look at him.
Pizza, you haven't seen that Green Book? Hey, racism.
They're going to do the Infinity Library. It's going to be good.
Forget about it. I think that about wraps up our thoughts on Alita Battle Angel.
Yes.
All right. So it sounds like you guys were not huge fans of the movie. And I mean, Vin,
I want to give it another shot.
Vin, your opinion is like three quarters valid because he... Because you only saw about three quarters of the movie.
That's fair.
But Mike, it sounds like you were a little underwhelmed by Alita.
Yes, for the most part.
That's a bummer because I had so much fun with this movie, and I am genuinely a little upset that you guys didn't like it as much as I did. But that's all right. So where can we find you guys online this week? Vin, you can plug your shit. What do you want to plug?
Oh, we're doing a revamp. We're no longer Krabbyland Productions. We are the Upstaters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're trying it because we were bad at marketing, as it turns out, and Krabbyland is just not really that marketable. So we're doing a re-release on a lot of our videos.
And
we're basically re-releasing everything we did, which I half hate, half love, because the biggest thing we ever did had like 4,000 views on it. So it's not like there's going to be a huge uproar. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah,
it's hard for people to be upset if they didn't see it in the first place.
But now so, people might discover it.
Hopefully, yeah. We're going to start re-releasing stuff. I'm in the movie Slate Yourself. I'm going to be in the movie Shoplifters of the World. And I'm on Twitter right now as the biggest Chungus. and my profile picture is Fat Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon. And
that's amazing.
I'm on Instagram as probably Vin Craig, I think, or at okay. Vincent J. Craig.
All right. It's good to know that before you actually start talking about it. But yeah,
but, yeah well, it's, you know, it's the same thing as every...
The precedent has been set already where that's not the case for you.
Yeah. Hey, I told no lies on this podcast. I didn't talk about anything true. I didn't see in that movie.
That's fair.
That's true. You did hold off until spoilers to reveal that you didn't see some of the movie.
So I missed the beginning and the ending and...
I saw the middle parts. There was
3 hours sleep the night before.
Can we at least agree that Alita: Battle Angel is a better movie that you guys didn't see than Green Book?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I would see it again. I liked it enough that I would want to see the rest of it.
Fair enough. I mean, you guys didn't see Green Book, but just vouch for me. I'll vouch for you. Alita is better. All right, Mike, where can we find you guys? Where can we find you online this week?
You can find me and all my multiple personalities, apparently, at MD Film Blog on Twitter.
Yes, you, your Viggo Mortensen doppelganger.
Mikey Two Takes, my Viggo Mortensen character.
Was it Mikey Two Takes and what was Vinny?
Vinny Deep Cuts.
Vinny Deep Cuts, Mikey Two Takes. I love it. Now, that should be a podcast. Just you guys doing your Viggo Mortensens back and forth for an hour, I would listen. Talking about the movies of Hulk Hogan.
Which we only see 3/4 of.
Yeah. If anything, we're going to have a lot of fun making fun of this the next time I come on.
Oh, absolutely. Going to give you a lot of shit. It's like you watch this movie and then you vanish from the audience like the hobo from the
Somebody snapped in the movie and I was like, yeah. What's happening?
I don't feel so good. All right. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. All of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to Filmbookcast for whatever this episode was. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCree Show. And that is, of course, Finn Craig. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to contact us, hit us up. Mike and Mike go to the movies at gmail.com is our email. We'll be back in 2 weeks and we'll be celebrating the 100th episode of Filmbookcast. A milestone, Mike. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Milestone for us and the movie we're talking about.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, because the only one movie gets to claim the crown of being the 100th episode of Film Bookcast. So
Mazel tov.
That's definitely what I meant, and you're right.
So that's something that Captain Marvel will always have with it.
Yes. That's going to be on the Blu-ray cover.
Exactly.
100th episode of Film Bookcast.
Yeah, so Captain Marvel coming out in 2 weeks. We'll be talking about it for our 100th episode. What better way for us to do a 100th episode than to review a Marvel movie? It feels like so very much us.
If you guys want, I can watch the previews and then come talk about the movie.
We somehow have to make it longer than this episode, though.
We'll see what happens. I mean, this was a long episode, man. But the Oscars, man.
Oscars,
it's the Oscars. The Oscars' fault. You know, no matter what happens with the Oscars, they always run long. Even if we're talking about them on a podcast. And you can check out our next Complete Works, where we're talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2015's Outcast featuring Hayden Christensen. That should be fun.
Great.
And thanks so much for listening, guys. We are out.
Wisely. It's going to be a 5-hour episode.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's the Oscars, you know, it's like a special
Oscars,
one.
Man, it's the glitz, the glamour. It's Hollywood's biggest night.
Where was all that while we were recording the actual bit? That's so good. Were you just holding on your best stuff, waiting for the bumper to play?